This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, Rudy. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed. At him.
Sharon Lawson Bram? Get him a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Get him a rinky do.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking hoe train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Watch your mouth, you scraggly Canadian.
That's a bit much, you, who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like big dick myself. I'm just curious. 5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
If you suck, call me gone when I nut. That's the end of us. Get your friend to fuck. Twist and bend the You know the deal. Niggas talking real easy on some ball and shit.
That's right.
Funny how quick these pricks forget. Acting like I ain't the reason.
Place to Be Nation. Holy shit. And welcome to episode 400 of the Place to Be podcast. I am your host, Just Rosero. And I'm going to waste no time tonight bringing in the man who's celebrating our 400th episode together, Scott Criscola. I can't believe it. It's been a rambunctious 5 years.
It has indeed. And good evening, JR. I don't have to say what episode it is, obviously. And every time we hit a milestone, we always are like, I can't believe we've gone this far. And the countdown to if this episode is going to be as fantastic as I know it's going to be.
Oh, you're already pushing 500. All right.
And then we're already going to five bills. So
the well, it's funny because we just did the 5th year birthday.
Yep.
You know, we talked
yep.
about that. Mm-hmm. And that's impressive.
Yeah, very
but
impressive.
I feel like 400 is more impressive because you can do a show for 5 years, but it can be, you know, 110 episodes, you know,
right.
Titans of Wrestling. But no, we're here, and we've done 400 episodes in 5 years, which I think is pretty crazy. A, that we're not sick of it, which is good. B,
yes.
That we've been able to keep finding the material and keep things going. And C, that I think we've, you know, been on the same trajectory quality-wise. So that all said, we do have some guests with us tonight, and we're going to bring them in now, and we're going to take a few minutes just talking a little nostalgia. Then we have a really cool special guest with us, and then we're going to bring in a bevy of staff members of Place to Be Nation. We're going to talk about the WrestleMania match all-time rank list. We have some other treats along the way. So let's go in order for seniority here. Of course, that always means our buddy Jordan Duncan's the first we're going to bring in because he debuted way back in the first season. First 10, I should say, first season. What's up, Jordan?
Hey, not much. How are you guys?
Good, good.
It's like Raw, where it's pretty much one long season. There's really beginning or end.
And then the rest of these guys, I don't know what order they debuted in. So we'll go Glenn Butler first, because we've known him the longest besides Jordan. Glennie, how are you?
Hello, hello, hello. I am good. I'm glad to be here.
And we also have, of course, Chad Campbell, the great co-host of Where the Big Boys Play, and our dear friend, Chad Lee.
Great to be on season 6 of the Place to Be podcast.
The premiere. And, of course, the man that makes this all happen, Mr. Brad Woodling. Brad, how are you?
I'm doing great. Episode 225 was my debut, if anybody's tracking at home. Scott used to do that all the time. Remember, he would quiz you? That's
yes.
one of my memories.
This could also moonlight as episode 9 of the Brad and Chad show, if we want to just throw that up there. So.
No, because we're both on the line. We're both on the line.
Yeah, it's impossible. We can't do a show together. I can't even believe this is happening, but...
Well,
I'm
it'll be like
it'll
be like the DVDs from WWE where they have to cut out Jesse Ventura. So we'll just cut out Glenn and Jordan and me and Scott, and we'll just be you guys and me with big gaps in between.
Nice.
So, you know, we chose you three, four for a reason. No, three, four. How many is on? One,
four.
Four. We chose four. You four for a reason. It's been a long week and a couple days of sickness here. But so we brought you four in for a reason because you're all very special to Scott and I in many ways. Of course, Glenn, yeoman's work at PoliceNation.com. I feel like you probably don't always get the publicity that you deserve, but do a ton of work. And you came in at a time, and Brad can vouch for me and Chad on this one, that when we needed someone desperately to help do the kind of stuff.
Oh, you mean because you were all having children?
Yes, we all were procreating, and Scott was rising up the ranks of the night, so we quickly needed someone, and you were a gift from God. So, and of course, we go way back 11 years, and we've gotten to meet over the last couple of years. We'll hang out in a few weeks. So it was important to us to have you here to talk, and Jordan, of course, as well, who we know for the same amount of time, 10 years. But also because you've been with us from almost the beginning on the show and the site. And, of course, Brad and Chad, you guys know the love we have for you for PlaceMeNation.com. So, and, of course, Brad, if it wasn't for you just how many years now? Three years ago when you creepily came up to us in the parking lot of MetLife.
3 years
Stadium.
Ago Sunday.
It was 3 years ago. And
took a piss in the parking lot, dreamed up all this.
we were walking through cars looking for a random bush.
My favorite part is a complete no-sell of me of Brad. I really don't remember meeting you at all that day. Like, I kind of remember you reaching out to me from Scott Keed's blog. Like, oh, hey, I'm going to meet up. I'm like, all right, cool.
No, I messaged you from the your old message board, the old one's still going, I guess. And,
it's still there. So
Chad and I dreamed this all up waiting in line at a porta potty for 25 minutes.
Was I in there? I don't remember. So. I mean, if I was, I apologize.
Brad. Oh, yeah. I know. It was me, Brad, and Derek Cornett's girlfriend at the time.
Yep.
That's why you guys bought it so quickly.
That's the brain trust of PTB.
She was there. She gets credit for that. But yeah, it was 3 years ago. And actually, it was episode 200 where you had kind of made like an offhand comment about Andy Flanagan. And potentially making a website, and that
could have been more off.
So I said, "All right." So there you go.
We're lucky. I mean, this is like the run of his life. He's on with the Seinfeld thing, Flanagan. I mean, he's churning out the content every week. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it from him.
This is why we needed Glenn, because we mistakenly put our trust in the beginning in Flanagan and Jordan. So we needed somebody to step in.
Andy Flanagan is an admin on the site. He has never done anything close to administrative.
He's an admin everywhere. Facebook He's pages, the message board. I've never seen him do one administrative.
Oh, my God.
He's the hidden behind-the-scenes mastermind.
Remember when Brad wanted all communication on the website to go through the Bigelow 34 message board?
That's right.
Well, I did well. You know, we were leveraging all the reviews that were already housed there, and I thought we'll just put a link up. And Justin was like, "Yeah, you know, let's get away from that." And then I saw the territory wars, and I was like, "Yeah, let's get away from that." Oh, and so we.
Is that still going? I haven't checked in a while. I think it's still going.
Didn't they have a big like thing about 8 months ago, and he shut it down or something?
Yeah. Well, he's on PWO doing. Territory stuff.
Yeah. I feel like a slumlord with the message board. You know, just kind of let it be now. I'm a shitty landlord. I never stop by to make sure everything's okay.
I'm checking it out. There's no.
I know there's some guys
going.
That still post reviews there. So we thank you for that. Keeping it alive.
Still got a big shout out to Deep Throat Ghoul still hanging out over there.
Yeah. Someday.
Wait. What? What's his name? Deep Throat Ghoul.
Oh yeah.
Like Ghoul.
Yep.
Yep. Steve Riddle still posting some reviews. Yeah. So.
What kind of message board was
Steve
this?
Steve Riddle! Wow!
Way back.
Remember last time I heard that name.
Yeah.
Holy. Well, when they figure out what Facebook is, you know, join the group. The live chats is going well.
Riddle's, I think Riddle's on Facebook, isn't he? Is he in the live chats? I don't know. I thought I was friends with him.
I don't know, but Justin, you need to go over here. Jizdale's posting, too. I don't know who that is, but...
is he posting okay?
Deep Throat Ghoul and Jizdale, huh?
Is Jizdale, is he causing problems?
There's some virusy looking content on the recent post. I'm aborting immediately.
So I should just delete him? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm thinking some admin action needs to be taking place. Yeah,
I don't know if I'm even logged in.
Keynote 5.3 torrent. I don't know.
Well, no matter what's going on, that place is far more active than the old Blog of Doom, where most of us got together.
That's true.
YouTube sex, move the manual, what women want and how to give it to them, PDF download plug-in. So yeah, that's even,
Oh gosh, I'm sorry, Justin, we're Justin number 400 and you have to redo the intro already.
that's from Jizdale.
Sure is.
I don't even know how to log. I can't log in. No, I got to figure this out. Oh no, it's the same. Welcome Bigelow 34. Oh, this is a mess. Okay, anyway, so this is fun. This is a good time. Any other nostalgic things, Scott, you wanted to touch on?
It's great to have Brad on. I can't remember the last time I talked to him. Probably was episode 225, it seemed like, or 220.
I believe it was Scott Papa. Was that what his name was?
Brian Papa.
Oh, good grief.
Scott Papa was actually a sportscaster here in Philadelphia, in my defense. So, Brian Papa.
Brian Papa. Yeah, I wonder how that worked out for him.
I think that was the last time.
Was that a fun meme?
300.
Was that a GoFundMe? Or was that – no, not a GoFundMe. Was that starter thing, right?
A Kickstarter. It was a Kickstarter.
Yeah. Just like somebody else we know that tried to Kickstarter.
You haven't been on since then, Brad? Is that what you're saying?
No, I did 300.
And you did the Halloween. You did Christmas.
Yeah, I did do a Christmas.
I don't know if the holidays count, though, because
I only count them if it's a showcase where I can put myself over. So I think it was
that. I think you put yourself over just fine in that Christmas episode. There's still plenty of it in there. So. You weren't on the last Halloween one, too? The most recent one?
No, I don't think he was.
Oh, well. Anyway. So, yeah, there's many episodes if you're new to the show. Hopefully you stuck around. So, Scott, we're talking about our old friends here, and and Glenn and JD and Chad and Brad. One of our original guests on the show, way back, episode 6, was my friend from college, Leanne Griffin, who is now works for a newspaper in Connecticut. We haven't talked to her since, what was it, like 34 or something like that, when she was 34. On, her and Josh Richard were on, we're belittling you for not understanding Twitter, and we talked some Office. So that was, I think, the end of 2011 or summer of 11. So she hasn't been with us in all that time. So I recently reached out to her randomly. And I was like, hey, Leanne, we're recording episode 400. And I think she was like shocked that we're even still going, let alone episode 400. Was impressed and proud. So I said, would you like to come on for episode number 400? Since it's been a while, we'll talk a little bit. And Scott, she came on. We pre-recorded an interview. So why don't we take a minute? We're going to pause and we'll listen to Leanne. We talk a lot of cool stuff. We talk some food, of course. We talked Ronnie and Sammy. We talked Hulk Hogan versus Gawker and her thoughts on that, because she wasn't following at all until I said, Leanne, you should follow this and then we'll talk about it. And she said, okay. And then she had lots of thoughts on it. So we'll pause for that. Then we'll take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to bring in more of our Police Termination staff members, mainly ones that worked on the WrestleMania match all-time rank list. Of course, that ran all week leading up to WrestleMania on PoliceTermination.com, where we ranked all 300 matches. So check it out. Pause this if you haven't yet, because we're going to argue. We're going to talk about our process to how we got to where we got. And there are a couple of hot button matches that caused a lot of fights. And Scott, we'll get your weighing in, and Brad and Glenn, since you weren't part of the process, Glenn, if you want to hang around too. And of course, we'll talk about Glenn's podcast where he shit on everything as well later. So why don't we go ahead? We'll listen to Leanne, and we'll take a break, and then we'll be back. All right, Scott, episode 400 here. Like we promised, a very special guest. And, you know, for our anniversary episodes and our special episodes, we like to dig back into our vault and bring back some fun, you know, guests from years gone by. And our guest here tonight has first appeared on episode number 6. We did kind of a in-depth, chat about careers and TV and food and everything else. And then came back later on and we talked The Office, and we also spent like 40 minutes trying to teach you Twitter, which still hasn't taken really. And that was a shit show. So go back and listen to those. Do you have that episode with you, Scott? Do you know what number it is?
Episode 6 was the Twitter and freelance writing and Jersey Shore. And then episode 33, which posted on May 24th, 2011.
There you go.
We talked about The Office and
social media.
Stuff. And social media. So
that was your lesson, your master's class. And
yes, lesson time.
Yeah, and you failed. But anyway, so with us, if you haven't figured it out yet, the one and only, the great Leanne Griffin. Leanne, how are you?
Good. How are you doing? Thanks for having me back.
Oh, we're so
absolutely.
Excited. It's absurd because I think we've name dropped you probably a whole bunch of times. And then, we're gonna have Leanne back
much.
Soon. And here we are 5 years later, and you're back. Very excited though. So why don't you take a moment? Catch us up, all our listeners up, on what the hell you've been doing. Because we last talked to you, you were running your own food review blog and kind of taking a little bit of a break from the pro news game. But I think you're back at it now, right?
I am back at the pro news game. So in the time when I spoke to you last, I was working as a freelance writer. I was working kind of as a regular contributor for the Hartford Current, where I had started my career in web news. And since then, I continued to work with them. I worked doing a daily food blog, and regular every 2 week restaurant feature columns, where we'd go to a restaurant, we'd find out the story behind what they were doing and take beautiful photos and just sort of highlight what interesting, new, or very noteworthy restaurants were doing in Connecticut. And since then, I worked up at a news outlet in Springfield. So I was sort of doing double duty for a while. I was doing the freelance work and running news and sports and kind of everything all around at MassLive.com in Springfield.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then I got the opportunity to come back full time to the Hartford Current in the summer of 2014. So I'm coming up on 2 full years of professional full-time food writing, which is pretty much the coolest thing you can do with your life.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a bit of work, and you know, there's a significant amount of reporting in it, but it's just, it's so much fun. I tell everyone we have the best job in the building. I have colleagues that I work with who come out and do photo and video work with me. And, you know, we've kind of gotten known in the area, and it's, we've seen a lot of things come and go, but more often than not, just really interesting concepts. And Connecticut is kind of a small market, but it's influenced in quite a few ways by New York. So we have some really talented chefs in the area who are trying some kind of interesting concepts that people aren't even doing in big markets. So it's cool to kind of discover that. And the chefs are very collegial, and they help each other out. And it's just, it's a cool market to be in. And I think it's overlooked quite a bit, which mm-hmm. is unfortunate, but you know, I think people should start paying attention to what we're doing here.
Well, one way you can get them to pay attention is to talk about the link you sent me from a piece here on the Hartford Current website that you had sent over that you wrote about a new place that's kind of a weird, interesting hybrid, right? Barbecue and fine dining. Do you want to just kind of talk about that and maybe, you know, shed some light on some of the culture in Connecticut?
Yeah, so we have there's a chef here by the name of Tyler Anderson, and he opened a restaurant called Millwright's in Simsbury, which is a Hartford suburb, kind of a nice kind of bedroom community. And yes. He does a lot of farm to table, and that's become kind of a cliche, but everything he does is truly local. He works with farms that are within, you know, a couple of miles of this restaurant, and has a great, great reputation, has been nominated for James Beard Awards several years in a row, and just has this wonderful opportunity to partner up with Bear Smokehouse, which has opened in Hartford, I think now 2.5 years ago. And it's a guy who had come here from Kansas City, who's a Kansas City native, and has just kind of blown up the scene with this barbecue. Just the craziest. It's just, I've never craved barbecue before. I crave his food. And so the two of them kind of partnered up after they did a farm dinner together on a farm in Simsbury, where they sort of melded their talents. So they did the fine dining thing. They did things like smoking beets and smoking shellfish and kind of thinking of these weird mashup things you'd never think to put together, and everything worked. And just two very, very talented guys. So they started a pop-up at the restaurant in Simsbury, where they were doing things like kimchi pancakes with pulled pork and taking barbecue bones and making broth to make things like pho and noodle soups, and just kind of things you'd never think to put together, and really cool high-end desserts with a barbecue sort of flair, like cornbread ice cream or things. And then they announced, so they started doing the pop-up thing last August, and then they announced in February. In fact, we got the scoop on this story because they kind of kept us in the loop. And when they signed their lease, they told us, hey, we're in it. And so they are actually building a full-time restaurant with that concept.
Wow, very cool.
In West Hartford's Blueback Square development, which has become a very hot place to be these days. So they are opening in, they're looking at late summer to early fall.
Sounds like a Scott Griscola road trip is needed.
I will have to truck up there, yeah.
Really, really highly anticipated thing. And just, they're both so well known in the community, and there was just such an outpouring of support, like, oh my God, you're doing something so cool here. No one's done this ever. This is really sort of the first concept like it in the country. And, you know, to me, my job is so much fun to sort of learn the stories behind these really interesting creative ventures.
Right. So, you know, and you kind of mentioned it. And to clarify, it's more than just, like, you're going out, tasting the food and reviewing it. Like you said, you're, you know, doing more of the reporting end of it, too. Like, you're not only reporting on the success of the restaurant or the food that's within the restaurant, but also the story of how the restaurant came to be and how it came to be successful.
Yeah, that's the majority of my job these days. I do a little bit of reviewing, but we don't have – we have what we call sort of cheap eats, small bites sort of things where we go someplace that isn't super expensive. So the kind of place you could go to for lunch or for dinner on the weekend and
right.
not spend a ton of money and just sort of try to find little niche places. Like we were down in Mystic today for another interview. And so we went to a Mediterranean place that I've always passed by because when I'm down on the shoreline, that area, I'm always eating seafood. So we went to
plenty of great places.
Yeah, absolutely. We went to this great little Lebanese place and they had phenomenal, you know, really light, good Mediterranean food. And I said, this is the kind of place I might not have gone to if I wasn't working.
Right.
So, but for the most part, we are reporting. So we're meeting with chefs. We're interviewing people that are at the forefront of these concepts and learning their stories. And, you know, there is a fair amount of reporting to it, which is good, which is my background. But yeah, it's just, it's a lot of fun. And then what we're doing is we're taking photos of these great menus for our professional photography, and then you just sort of taste the food when you're done because we're paying for the food as part of our our reporting venture. So sometimes I do come home with bags of food like I did today.
Can't beat that. Husband's a happy man.
Yeah.
He and you, of course, got that reporting background, as many may have heard back in episode 6. But if you're new to the show, working for me, Leanne, on the Assumption College news station.
I know. It seems like forever ago.
Band right? of Misfits.
So we go way back. And that's why I can sit here and ask you this, what I asked you last time, Leanne. How the hell do you stay in shape when you're driving around to all these restaurants, eating all this food and tasting it all out and doing your job?
I mean, I probably could do a better job of that, but I've got a treadmill in the basement. You eat salads on your off days. There were times we did a whole pizza series back in September.
Yeah, I remember.
And it was a lot of fun, but we chose 10 pizzerias across the state, and it was really reader driven. So we're asking people, where do you like to go? Where's your favorite place that isn't an obvious Frank Pepe's or Sally's in New Haven? Where's your little, in the little corners of the state. So we went everywhere from Litchfield to New London, which is way west to way east in the state. And we tried 10 different pizzerias and ate 2 pizzas at each. We tried to do a baseline cheese pizza. And then sort
I'm
of
impressed.
Yeah, I mean, but after a while, it's you're going to 2 pizzerias in one day and you might be really hungry at your first stop. But my colleague and I would just, you eat one piece of one, maybe one piece of the other, because you're going to get full really quickly.
Right, you're going to have a stop to go.
And then everyone that back at the office is waiting for the leftovers. Where's pizza? Where's pizza? Where's pizza?
So which place won? What was the best pizza?
Well, it wasn't a top pizza. It was just we didn't choose one, but I did have a personal favorite. It was actually in Simsbury. It was a place called Little City Pizza.
Okay.
And we had never written about it before, but they did something with – I love white pizza. I love pizza with a white base. And it was something with chicken and artichokes and leeks. And it doesn't sound that lovely when you talk it out, but it was so good. So I can send you the link for that too.
Well, neither does the clam pizza from Pepe's there. But
I love clam pizza.
I know, but it sounds awful, right? I
mean, it does if you haven't tried it or if you're not a seafood person, because I have worked with people at newspapers who aren't from – you know, the East Coast, they're from the Midwest, and like, what the hell is that? What are you putting on a pizza? But
they don't know what they're missing.
Well, yeah. I had quite the experience last time I was there with my buddy Roger. Went there for work to the area, and where we are, you know, we were just going to run out because everyone said, oh, we'll get Pepe's pizza. And we're like, yeah, okay, we got some time. We'll go get it. So we're like, I'll walk. It was nice out. And the walk from where we were to get the pizzas was a little bit further than we kind of planned on doing. And then we're walking back with these just two huge pizza boxes. And like a fireman, we walked by. It was either a fire station or a police. It was something. And this guy took us back to work in his truck because we were walking. Oh. He felt bad for us. And it was warmer than we thought. We had, you know, we had a shirt and tie on, and we're like sweating and carrying these huge, two huge pizza boxes. but the pizza was very good, and we did get the clam that day. So
yeah.
I'm looking at the list. I'm looking at the article now, Leanne, and there's a lot of these places I've never been to before.
Yeah, they really were kind of like hidden in the middle of nowhere. This Bohemian Pizza out in Litchfield was just, it was such a wild place. It, you know, like cow print booths and It was a canoe upside down on the wall, and just album LP covers all over the walls, and just the one we had. I'm looking at it now. Pineapple, barbecue, pulled pork, just all kinds of stuff.
I think Scott should try all these, and then we'll have you back on.
Yeah.
The only one on your list that I had is Tolly's in East Haven, and their pizza is excellent. I like their pizza.
Yeah, that
a lot.
Was a great place.
But there's a couple of if you do another one, there's a couple of places I can recommend to you if you do another sequel. If you want to do another 10 places, I got some places for you that
I kind of think we have to. We got so many emails after that. You know, people get angry. It's, you missed my favorite, you don't know anything sort of attitude. It's just,
nobody eats pizza in Thompson, you know? It's like,
yeah, but it's just, but then people, like, we went to this New England pizza in Vernon. It was just, it was the kind of place, it was funny because I grew up in Worcester, and the New Haven style pizza was all new to me when I moved to Connecticut. And sort of that thicker pan pizza, if you look in the picture here, it's just like a thick, round pan pizza. It's a Greek style pizza, and that's what I grew up with in Worcester. And so we get to this place, and it just, to me, it was so nostalgic. It just, the places that I grew up with, and the, I think I ended up meeting the owner's son there, and he emailed me later because I gave him my card. He says, "You have no idea. We're so excited to be part of this." And they were just, it was thrilling. And it's just to sort of be able to give that to a business through your work is really exciting, because people have been in it for 22 years or something, just... It was longer than they might have been close to 30 years. Mm. Just 1982. So like the nicest people.
Mm. Well, Leanne, you know, we have many things in common. Went to school together, reported the news together, did some stupid shit together. we love pizza and love to eat.
Yeah.
We also love the Jersey Shore.
Yep.
And the Jersey Shore went away, sadly, a few years ago. But we both used to talk back and forth on Facebook and comment each week about what was going on. And there was a time there where anytime a marathon was on MTV, I'd have it on, maybe throw it on Netflix. And it's cooled a bit. It's kind of moved to the back of my brain, but it's always still there in my heart a little bit. And when the news came across last week that Ronnie and Sammy were back together.
Yeah, no kidding. I kind of expected it.
Of course, but just to see it come out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah, I to be honest with you, I actually did watch the spinoffs that Snooki and JWoww.
How
and,
are those?
It was interesting because you saw them in their role as the party girls, and then you kind of see them move on, grow up, get married, and have kids. And it's a little bizarre, but they're kind of trying to figure out motherhood together, and it's endearing. It's just they've grown up,
right?
I know it sounds insane, but it's just to see them in a whole different light. I mean, Snooki's still Snooki. She'll always be Snooki. But to see her as a mom and to have that much more responsible attitude, like I kind of had a different level of respect for her.
Yeah, she came a long way. I mean, you watch those first few episodes and just the train wreck potential. I mean, you might have said if there's anyone that's going to like die of alcohol poisoning on the show, it's going to be her.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, got herself into shape. She had a baby and
yeah.
Does she have two or one? She's
got two. Right. And then she and Johnny got married. And she's sort of, I think they have a new show. I meant to mention this to you, but they have a new show where the two of them are flipping houses.
Yes, okay. I saw the commercial for that. Yeah.
Is that on TLC?
Yeah, something like that, where they're flipping houses down by the Jersey Shore, and that's kind of their new business venture. And I think she has a clothing line, and she was on Dancing with the Stars. And I mean, she's turned that whole kind of shit show into a pretty much bona fide celebrity.
Yeah, unfortunately for her, she'll always be number two as far as women flipping houses on that channel, as far as looks go. But it's good. It's good to see her do that. And, you know, Ronnie said, you're not going to find love at the Jersey Shore, but they almost all did, I think.
So she married Gianni, and then Roger showed up at one point, didn't he?
Yeah.
Roger showed up. And then
Ronnie and Sam.
Yeah, I can't imagine it'll last much longer. But
well, as I say, do you think this was meant to be? Do you think it's like, okay, we faded too much? I'm only getting, you know, $300 a night at the club instead of $5K like I was getting 3 years ago. Let's get back
know.
In the news. Or do you think they're kind of like, all right, we're in our late 20s, early 30s, and we're not going to do any better?
I don't know. Maybe that's a really good question, because everyone has fallen out of the limelight. I think Snooki and JWoww are the only ones who had kept doing something remotely related to showbiz.
Oh, Paulie, I guess, with the DJing, right?
Yeah, but then he kind of fizzled out too.
Yeah, he's probably, I mean, he's, He's got to be working club somewhere, I'm sure, and doing okay. If anyone, he had at least some kind of transferable skill other than show up and drink.
Right, so. Yeah. He did. What was he? Was at the Big E a few years ago.
Oh, jeez.
maybe two years ago, he was at the Big E.
Was he DJing or was he just hanging
out? He was DJing. I think he closed out. I think might have been 2 years ago. I'm trying to think. I think I was still working in Springfield. This might have been like 2013.
It's quite the gig.
And then
spinning in front of the Rhode Island house.
Yeah, but they go from these huge gigs in Vegas to West Springfield, Massachusetts. I mean,
it is the Big E. I mean,
yeah, but still, it's still a downgrade.
Oh, where are you at now? You know. Paris, yeah. You at the Bellagio? No, the Big E.
Western Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Where? Yeah.
I haven't been to the Big E in forever. I'm gonna try to get there with the kids maybe this year or next year.
Yeah, we that's one of the big things we cover every year. That's because there's a huge contingent from Connecticut that goes up there, so we go up every year for the media preview. This year it was fried martinis.
Nope, fried martinis.
It was fried martinis, and they wouldn't explain the exact process behind it, but it was something like, yeah, it was frozen. They got a ball of, it was very boozy. Surprisingly, they somehow froze, kind of like an ice cube. I would say like an ice cube of. Like Cosmopolitan or apple martini or something to the point where they were able to cover it in batter. I know alcohol doesn't freeze unless it's ridiculously cold, but then it turned into kind of like a munchkin sort of consistency where you bit into it and you were tasting boozy jelly. And I wish I could describe it, but I mean, I was surprised because I know alcohol cooks off. Right. I was surprised at how much booze I tasted.
They must have really loaded the thing up.
Yeah, wow. It was kind of fun. I mean, I don't know if I would go out of my way to get it again, but when it's part of your job, that was the assignment that we had for this year. We try to do something different every year. And the first year we went, we did, we just kind of, I'm trying to think of what we did. This year we wanted to do a different angle. So we looked for cocktails and beer and sort of the 21 plus venture mm-hmm. as the Big E, like drink your way through the Big E.
Right, right.
And so there's lots of craft beer tents, and there was a martini tent that the V1 Vodka people who made the fried martini had done signature cocktails, and so kind of went around looking to see what you could do as sort of a 21 plus visit, and there's these huge margaritas that come in jugs, and it's just a playground. It's fun. I brought my colleague, it's from Philadelphia, and she had never been, and she was just like a kid walking around. She made us go down the slide. We went down the giant slide. I was wearing a dress.
Let me put on a show. I remember your 21 drink through AC. Never mind Big E.
oh my god!
But anyway,
that's 14 years ago. Now.
I know. Well, let's say you're 21 very plus towards the Big E. But the Ronnie Tanner, that ties in well, of course, to the fried martini. So let me ask you this, and Sky, you can weigh in. I know you're a Jersey Shore guy. What's your prediction? By the time Scott and I get to episode, we'll say 600, made 3 years, are they still together? Are they married? Are they broken up? Are they dating still?
Oh, I really think it's anyone's guess. I wouldn't have seen them together in 2016. Mm. So maybe married, had a couple kids, and then massive.
He beats her.
Well, I don't want to see that. I was going to say massive.
I shouldn't talk about that. I'm sorry.
Divorce. Just yeah. Painful divorce.
Very painful. I'll say that they're, I believe in the love.
I agree
here.
With that.
I think they've had their years apart and they realize that it's not going to get better than what they had at the Shore. And they love each other deep down. And Ron is back, Ron and Sam, for life. And there'll be a lot of fighting in there.
I'd like to see them work it out.
Crazy.
But it's just, you try to think about what they may have done in terms of editing to make that look terrible. But then he's picking up her bed and he's throwing it out on the deck. Like, I don't know if you
broke
come back
my glasses, Ron.
I don't know if you come back from that. I just couldn't see staying with a man treating me that way. But I don't know what she's thinking.
It's the Jersey Shore. You never know what can happen. So speaking of you never know what can happen, let's just take a couple minutes here because I alerted you to this Hulk Hogan Gawker court case that was going on. It wasn't really on your radar. Are you glad I alerted it to you?
Yeah, I mean, I was picking it up bits and pieces and sort of seeing tweets and, I don't know if it seemed like so much money.
It's a lot of money. Well, and they gave like another $25 million the other day for no reason, apparently.
My thought was, so they said, I'm looking at this article now, and they said that so the total award is $140 million, and that's more than three times the company's revenue in 2014.
Yeah, they're fucked. If they, I mean, if they don't win the appeal, if they can even appeal, I don't know. But if they don't win, they're done. I mean, they're absolutely, because he's not going to see all that, but I thought I read that they were worth like $87 million or something. So that's it. They'll pay him that, and then they're done. Or at least we'll have to declare bankruptcy and go from there. But I mean, they have a lot of sites under the Gawker banner. I mean, Deadspin's obviously the biggest one, but you know, they have a whole, you know, shoot of sites. And, you know, I wonder how much they – I'm curious how they – they've been so indignant to take it down and their belief that they should be able to print this kind of stuff, you know, freedom of speech kind of thing. You know, but you wonder deep down if they would have traded those values and standpoint in to just have not – you know, said fuck you when they asked them to take the story down and just take it down. Because it'd be a lot less headache. But
it's a very, if you're familiar, it's a really irreverent type of brand. And, you know, they do, there are times where they've done good journalism, but at the same time, it seems, I don't know, it seems that there really wasn't a ton of newsworthiness.
Right.
In his tapes. I just kind of thought it was tawdry and kind of unnecessary. Yeah, it just seemed like, you know, I think if there had been something where he had been, I mean, I don't know. I don't have a ton of valid opinions on the case, I would say, but I was kind of put off by something that had been said. I just kind of caught in a tweet, but one of the female editors, I think the jury had asked her if, you know, she was sleeping with her higher ups. And I didn't really catch the context, but the question pissed me off so much that I wrote to you, and I said, all right, I'm kind of paying attention here. it was such a shitty thing to say to a young female journalist. We've gotten bits and pieces of sexism in the field, and that just caught me as just like, what was the point of that question?
Right. What does this have to do with anything?
Yeah. It's just, and so that, and then I was kind of follow a lot of Gawker and ex Gawker editors on Twitter, and they just Twitter lit up when that was said. And I just saw like, just, I don't know.
Yeah, that was worse than when Hulk Hogan differentiated the size of his penis versus the character's penis.
Oh, dear God, yeah. I mean, there was a good reason that I didn't.
It's absurd. I mean, the whole thing's ridiculous. But like you said, it wasn't. Yeah, you know, it wasn't much there. It's later on the tapes that leaked out of him being in bed with the, you know, all the racist stuff that kind of sunk his career. But he's bounced back. He made back all the money they lost in his divorce and by losing that work. And a lot of people seem to be on his side in this. I mean, you know, some people flaunting the First Amendment stuff, throwing it out there. But, you know, where does that stop? Like you said, what's the news in this? You know, it just seems like it's straight up just running it to embarrass the guy. But let me ask you this. And Scott, I know you'll get this reference. And I think I retweeted something where there was a post I saw about this today. You know, what are the chances that Hogan, Bubba the Love Sponge, and his wife are in a hotel room right now, reenacted the Wild Things three-way with all the money? like, what is, you know, is there, I mean, was this set up? I mean, it, you know, it's possible, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I think anything's possible these days in showbiz. Yeah, I just, it's so much money. It's, I don't think any other news organization has ever been in this position.
Right.
So it's just sort of, there's really no precedent for it. And I think we're all going to be paying attention to what happens in terms of them financially.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I couldn't believe when they, you know, people weren't sure if he'd even win. And then to get that award was crazy.
And then more.
Well, and the crazy part to me is, with all the stuff that came on after, is what you could argue sunk his career more. The sex tape thing didn't really affect him at the time. Like, he was still with WWE and all that was going on. Mm-hmm. And it was when the racist stuff came out, you know, last year, when those tapes leaked to him, you know, talking about his daughter dating a black man and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
That's what got him canned from WWE and really sunk him. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny that I thought for sure that argument would be one that they'd use. Say, hey, you didn't really lose out because of the sex tape. I know you have the aggravation and all this other stuff, but that's why I thought maybe Gawker would be okay.
I feel that, and I don't, it's kind of apples and oranges, but that same defense was used in a different way with the Aaron Andrews case.
Right.
That the attorney for the hotel had been saying that they thought, you know, just a shitty thing to say, but that her career hadn't suffered
Right. That she actually benefited.
Which is terrible. I feel, I saw a tweet that was sort of comparing responses to Hulk versus her, and people saying, well, that's so much money, she doesn't deserve that kind of money, blah, blah, blah. And then them going, well, good, he deserved that, good. And just sort of this, right. Hello, this is a huge double standard here.
Right. And the hotel was worse because they enabled. Yeah. I mean, it's not like Gawker put the video camera in, Bubba's bedroom.
It was a whole different story. But I just thought we're looking at two invasion of privacy type cases involving famous people.
Right.
And you're reacting to it in such a, but to me, it seemed like a huge double standard, but I was just, yeah.
I mean, just any time we were saying my character of Hulk Hogan's, dick is 10 inches and mine's only 6 or whatever. that's the court case of the century right there to me. I'm hoping this is like an, they're doing the OJ thing now, the American mm-hmm. Crime Story. I'm hoping we get the Hulk
they'll
Hogan
do it,
60.
Yeah.
Yes, that's... I can only imagine.
I'm not sure I'd watch that.
That'll be fantastic. Let me tell you. Yeah. So, all right, Leanne, we want to thank you for taking some time here tonight to join us. It was awesome to talk to you here 5 years later, but we're not going to wait 5 years the next time. We're going to have you back.
Absolutely
after
not.
After Scott downs all the carbs and the pizza.
Yes.
We'll bring you back to discuss, and hopefully this whole thing will be completely wrapped so we can talk about that some more. Hopefully we'll be talking the wedding of Ronnie and Sammy.
Talk about that again.
We'll talk about everything. Or maybe we'll pick a show that we can talk about. Pay attention to. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm always happy to talk to you guys, so thank you again for your time.
Anytime. And,
it's great to have you on.
Yeah, keep up the great work. We'll
you too.
Keep everyone, of course. So why don't you just let us know quickly on Twitter how we can follow you, and Hartford Current, obviously, just kind of search your name and tag you out there.
Yeah, on Twitter, I'm L Griffin, CT, LGRIFFINCT. And I work for the Hartford Current, and our entertainment brand is ctnow.com.
Yep, that's right.
So that's majority of where we have our entertainment and food.
Maybe you should do a top 10 Chinese places in Connecticut, because I personally think they all stink. So if you can find a gem, let me know. Because the one that I used to like, there was one Dynasty in North Haven. And they won like the Advocate best, and it's closed. So I don't know. Even know where to go now. So you'll have to find me a good Chinese place.
There's kind of a fancier Chinese place in Middletown. It's called Forbidden City Bistro. Hmm. And it's definitely much more upscale, and it actually kind of looks like an art gallery inside. It's beautiful. But in terms of fancy stuff, they win a lot of awards. I think they've been around about 10 years now.
Oh, okay.
But...
Forbidden City sounds like we were dying with Triple H, Scott.
Come to the Bistro, Chris Golo.
All right, that's it. Leanne, thank you so much. We'll talk
to
you soon.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate you coming by.
Have a good night.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
That is fine. No, we're not. Of course you had to play that. Grey Goose. Grey Goose. There's not many on. I'm looking forward to everything. I'll be racking up any kind of bill. Oh, not too many surprises. You get a martini, you can get whatever you want. Not a la carte. Hopefully, Plax brings out a gun at a club. We're all done. We're all ready for it. It's a Southern Caribbean crew.
Kevin Ali is a motivator.
Is that Muhammad's cousin?
Kevin Ali is a motivator. Kevin Ali. Kevin Ali.
Oh.
All All right, we are back from break. Hope you enjoyed hearing everything that's going on at PoliceNation.com. And, of course, with WrestleMania week here, you should be checking out everything. Of course, you should, if WrestleMania isn't over by the time you're listening to this, you should check out Brian Bayless's WrestleMania preview. We have Stephen Graham's piece on why Shane McMahon versus The Undertaker was the worst booked main event in WrestleMania history. We have some great podcasts for you, as always, including the main event from last night that featured a few of the guys on the show with us here right now. And, of course, Kevin Kelly Show, Dangerous Alliance, all the stuff from this week, Between the Sheets, all the usuals. But one of our showcase pieces of the week was a large group initiative that we started about a month ago. And all the guys we're bringing in here today were part of that process. And that was our all-time WrestleMania match ranking project. So we took all 300 wrestling matches from WrestleMania history. We threw them onto a big sheet, and we used a Facebook page to start, and then we broke down into Google Sheets and went mad from there. And we somehow consensus ranked all of these matches. We argued them out. We went through 15 different methods, and after arguing back and forth how we should rank them, we ended up just going with what we ended up with all the voting. And then big ups to Aaron and Chad and Andy, who I'll talk about in a moment, who joined me in writing all the write-ups, because we wanted to not just post a list. We feel like any site can do that. We wanted to make sure we added a little bit about every match and almost justified why they were where they were, so especially the higher ones. So we thought that was important. So a big thanks to the guys who helped participate in the writing there. And Scott, you weren't part of the project, but I wanted to do it on this show for a reason, because you obviously are familiar with all these matches throughout WrestleMania history. And I wanted someone who hadn't been part of the process, who is looking from the outside, to both talk about our, you know, help us talk about our process, but also share your thoughts on how you would have ranked some of these top matches or bottom matches as we look through them. So that's your role here. So with us still is Jordan Duncan from earlier, and so is Chad Campbell. They both participated in the project. And also Aaron George. How are you, Aaron? Wrong episode.
My son died in an accident.
Okay. I'm good, guys. How are you?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I feel I'd bring some levity and some talk of death.
It's always Christmas time.
Sick Canadians.
All right. And we have episode 400. We have two brand new voices here. I think one of them you may have heard in the past popping in for like a quick one-liner. I feel like I've heard him before, but I don't know. It's been a lot of episodes. But we've known these guys, Scott, since like 2003 or 2004. So we've been good friends for a long time. One of them, of course, and that is Andy Helene. And I know I probably just butchered your last name, and you think I'd know how to say it. But of course, Andy, we've been tight for a while. We traded DVDs way back in like 2006, I think. And you're new to PoliceNation Nation this year. We're thrilled to finally have you on board. And you've been a podcast maniac this week. But welcome to your official mothership debut. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm ready to talk about X-Files tonight. Let's do it.
All right. We can do that. Did I get your last name right? I am so sorry.
Oh, no. You actually got it right. It
was boom. Cool. Look at that. Fuck you, Crispolo. Okay. And
hey, I got it right last night, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. And finally, of course, joining us as well is our buddy Neil Trauma. You know him as the Walt Disney World Traveler. Neil, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. And I have to point out before we even start that the way I got involved in this project was you posting to our Facebook group and saying, we're thinking about ranking every match in WrestleMania history, to which I replied, well, that's incredibly insane, which, you know, I didn't think that was going to be my invitation to join and take part in the insanity, but apparently it was.
And it was
so here
insane.
I am.
And then I regretted it instantly because you are a massive outlier in all of this, and you caused Chad and I yanking our hair out as we were doing the grades. Like, this would have been so easy if Neil didn't give this one rank this one first and everyone else had it like next to last. But
I'm such a dick.
Such is life. Such
Neil is broke life. Math.
He did break math. He pissed all over it. So like I said, we ranked all 300, and part of what we did was we bucketed them under duds, decent, good, poor, very good, great, all time, and then GOAT. And GOAT, we had 13 matches that we considered to be in the running for greatest of all time at WrestleMania. And when we did this, we factored in everything. We factored in work rate. We factored in storyline, memorability, importance of the card, the gravitas
food
of
the concession stand.
Yeah. I factored in memorabilia.
The music, everything. It's the whole package. It's not just pure work rate. It's not just snowflakes. It's everything. And that's how we bucketed these. And then inside the bucket, we ranked them and voted and assigned grades to them. We were, ranking within the bucket, and that's how we determined the overall order. So what I thought we'd do today is go through our kind of bottom 10 and our top, 13 or so GOATs, argue those out, talk about our thoughts behind them, and then if we have some time, I figured we could kind of talk about any other ones that led to, you know, gigantic arguments. So was anyone out here that was part of the project against our bottom two, which were Jerry Lawler, Michael Cole, and Vince McMahon and Bret Hart? Because I know we had some, you know, debate. Do we consider all the squashes that happened or those, you know, putrid diva matches that happened a lot in the 2000s as the worst? Or do we factor in the build, the importance, the hype? And that's the way we ended up going, because we did get some questions is how could you put these couple of matches at the bottom when you consider there were some really bad, just women's, you know, clusterfucks that happened. But, you know, I was fine with the way we went about it. I thought it was right. Did everyone agree here? Anyone disagree?
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Like, I mean, we didn't really argue the middle bottom ones, but even like the squashes being duds, I mean, most of them served a purpose for the most part. And even the divas stuff, there was something behind them. Like, they're, you're not expecting much when the cat is fighting Terry, right? But like when you devote like 40 hours to God, what the hell's his name?
Lawler.
Jerry the King Lawler.
Jerry Lawler.
Like, why can't I remember him?
Quickly,
I would devote that much time.
Jerry Lawler.
Absurd.
How about you, Chad?
Yeah, I mean, I was there for Lawler versus Cole, and that was a match going into WrestleMania 27 may have actually been one of my most anticipated matches. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, Jerry Lawler throughout his career had some really incredible kind of miracle matches with people like the Cobra and Snowman and kind of these under the radar guys. But it was just so long and so drawn out. And as bad as that main event was at WrestleMania 27, I really think that Lawler versus Cole kind of sealed the fate for that show overall to be in the bottom third of most WrestleManias when you rank it overall. It was just a miserable 30 minutes to be sitting there live.
And the fact that it didn't end the feud was even, you know,
everyone yeah, and Cole wins. Right. Like, the ending of that is just dumb, too, because Cole ends up winning. And, it should just, I mean, because Lawler had the really good matches with The Miz around that time. Mm-hmm. So they should just had, you know, Lawler beat up Cole pretty much for 5 minutes. He gets his WrestleMania moment, and that's that. I mean, I think that's what happened with Bret versus Vince, too, is, I mean, Bret was so limited. We figured he was going to be very limited, but, I mean, he was extremely limited. And instead of them just trying to do kind of a quick squash or something like that, it just became way too bloated.
Now, Andy, I know you're, you know, kind of been in and out during some of that time as with your wrestling fandom. Were you locked in around this time for both those matches? Were you watching live, or is it something you revisited? And what were your thoughts when we talked about having those at the bottom two?
I had Bret and I guess Vince as my worst because, yeah, I was super into that show because it seemed like the top four matches, they all had like these huge long-running feuds because it wasn't just Bret and Vince, but they had like Jericho and Edge and then I think Batista and Cena and then obviously Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. And then it was just like that match. It wasn't just that Bret was limited. It was just the complete opposite that of what they should have done. I almost felt like Vince was like the babyface. I was cheering for him to make a comeback or something.
Because he was almost murdered.
Right, yeah. And they did. They did swing it. Yeah, you definitely started to feel watching that. You're like, all right. You know, this is like a 6-year-old man getting the piss beat out of him with a chair. It's for as much as he wronged the Hart family, after a while, I started to feel a bit much. And at the time, too, it felt like, okay, they're writing off Mr. McMahon. And he even said that at the time, like, you know, Mr. McMahon started with Montreal and it ends here at WrestleMania with Bret Hart ending the character. And of course, you know, we eventually see that wasn't true, which I think takes a little sting out of it as well, looking back. Neil, what are your thoughts around these two being last, or were you kind of more a proponent of like the squash theory?
I think this could be my one point in the night where I'm in agreement with everybody else that, yep, those two matches suck.
Jordan, same?
Yeah. The other thing, too, with Lawler Cole is it's Jerry Lawler's only WrestleMania match he ever got, too. And that's what they gave him.
Yeah, and that, you know, even with all, you know, and Chad being there live, even with the way it was all went down, if Lawler just still wins, do you think the taste is different? Even if it's a long match with all the bullshit, if he hits the pile driver and wins at the end, do you think it feels a little bit better?
Maybe slightly, but I don't think it matters that much. Yeah. I mean, I may flip both of them and then would put like Hart McMahon last and even the match like Bossman Undertaker. But yeah, it was still a bad match. But yeah, Cole winning was kind of like the icing on the cake. They're like, oh, you know, you've made us suffer through this and now you still are going to continue this feud. I mean, what's the purpose?
Scott, what are your thoughts on those two being considered, in our eyes, the worst two Mania matches of all time?
I mean, Lawler-Cole, sadly, I think the reason it was so you guys have thought about it so badly is because it was intertwined literally in every other feud building to Mania. It's almost like the only build for that Mania that didn't involve the two of them was probably Triple H Taker. It seemed like they kept that one alone. But everybody else, Cole got his, you know, had his heel mitts on, and it seemed like Lawler had to kind of defend it. And so it's like the feud kind of worked its way through all these other feuds leading up to Mania. And it kind of ruined it because you thought there was going to be a big build and you thought there was going to be a big ending, and it ended up not. And I still can't figure out why, even with Austin as the guest ref. I don't get it. As for – I didn't have a lot of promise going into Brett and Vince because Brett really couldn't do anything anyway. So I don't know what anyone was really expecting. It's not like he could actually wrestle. And, you know, Vince was obviously at the back end of even attempting to have a match. So I'll be honest with you. Maybe just because of the build, I would almost put Brett and Vince lower. Because I don't know what anybody really expected out of both of them. So maybe it was expectations.
Well, I think that's why maybe we people. Had it. Well, I think that's why we had Lawler Cole lower, was because people had expectations. So that one, because Lawler had some pretty good matches and Cole was doing such great heel work, that everyone's more disappointed because they expected it to be better. Whereas Hart McMahon, you're kind of like, well, Brett's in rough shape. Vince hasn't wrestled in a while. I don't think people expected that to be much. And I think that helped it slightly. You know, I said at the time, and I've said it ever since, what they should have done was either had those guys in Cena and Batista's corners, and then if Cena wins, Brett gets 5 minutes with Vince, or just do a tag match, which was heavily rumored too, with the title on the line, Cena and Brett versus Batista and Vince, you could have also done. But I thought for sure those feuds would be tied together.
I had it like, with Vince and Brett, I kind of had it like what they did with this Sting and like Triple H last year, was where they had the NWO and like DX get involved. I thought maybe they should have the Stooges come out, Austin on his four-wheeler, even right. Shane, and have all these other guys, because they're limited, so have these other guys like, you know, get beat up or.
But if they did it like last year, Vince would have won.
Right, so everything but that part, I guess. So here are our bottom 10, and we can kind of break it down, because there's one right outside the bottom 10 I want to talk about, because it was kind of a hot issue on our Facebook page today. So our bottom 10, Lawler Cole, McMahon Hart, Undertaker Boss Man, Moolah Velvet McIntyre, Adrian Adonis Uncle Elmer, and if you hear Glenn's and Scott's, and I guess JD, you can speak for them since you were on that one.
I did not speak highly of this match, though.
But it sounds like they were all about Uncle Elmer, so you can fill us in on that in a moment. Terry and the Cat, the Diva Battle Royal, from 25, I believe that was. Tori Wilson and Candice Michelle. 10-woman tag from WrestleMania 26. Sable and Tori against Jackie and Stacy. And then Aki Bono, Big Show. And then right, you know, three spots above that, just outside the bottom 10, Hulk Hogan and Yokozuna from 9. And we had a couple people kind of arguing that on our Facebook page today, thinking that that match shouldn't be, you know, looked down upon as much as it is because of the moment, you know, because of Hogan coming back and shocking everyone, winning the title. But when you weigh what that meant to the rest of the year and the WWF, like, I don't care about the moment, because it was the wrong decision. For as fun as it may have been for 30 seconds, it really set back the company multiple months. And Hogan clearly was in no mood or had no desire to do business with them at all. I don't understand the justification where it should be any higher. Does anyone believe that Hulk Hogan and Yokozuna was too low on this list or in general?
The only reason I would maybe excuse it being higher is just because it's so short. You know, I would rather watch a short bad match than a long bad match. But that's the only thing.
Yeah, I mean, if it's higher, it doesn't go much higher.
Right.
I mean, it can't. Like, it's too disastrous.
Yeah.
And right. The black eye is too pronounced.
Right. So even something like Undertaker, Giant Gonzalez, which is a little bit longer, which recently rewatching it, I said, Chad's going to laugh, but I really don't think it's as bad as people claim it is.
Come on.
I watch it again. It's really, they hustle. Like, Taker really hustles. It's not that
hustle.
Bad.
I don't think you know what that means.
Yeah, watch it. I do know what it means. Watch the match. Going off your memories from decades ago.
Dude was getting tickled by Gonzalez's suit while he was watching that match.
It was a good story they told. Anyway, I'd rather watch that than some of the other stuff that's above it. I'll put it that way. How about you, Andy? Any thoughts on Hogan and Yoko in that spot?
I almost wouldn't even have even had it on a list at all because, I don't know, I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with you there, Andy. I don't even think it should have been on the list when you really think about it. I mean, I guess it has to be because we want to be complete and it was a match, but we didn't consider Brock against Roman to be one match and Brock and Roman and Seth as a second match from last year. So I almost feel like it's like that. Like this was the 1993 equivalent of a random Money in the Bank cash-in. So, but whatever, it is what it is.
I guess the difference is Brett Yoko ended, whereas Reigns and Brock didn't. So it was kind of the continuation of One Piece. You know what I mean? Whereas Hogan Yoko was almost like a brand new match because the match had completely been over when he came out.
Yeah.
I guess that's right, my thinking behind it anyway.
Radio Row in Dallas. We're here in Dallas. There's a big building here, Dallas. It's WrestleMania, Dallas. How are you, Mikey?
Not bad, dog. Always good to be back here, Radio Row. Look at WrestleMania. We see all the all our friends, even that idiot Michael Kay, his big head sitting down over there. We're looking forward to it. Always going to be a great time. We'll be up in the box with Jerry here in Jerry Jones Land, of course. You know, me and the tuna will be up in the box. We'll have our Giants gear on, though, huh? Huh, dog? Huh?
They're not here at all. Listen, Mikey. Tonight, Mikey, we're going to be here at this NXT thing. Have you heard about this, Mikey? It's like AAA. It's like AAA for wrestlers, Mikey. It's like it's like going to, like, Scranton, you know? What do you think? What do you think of these NXT guys?
Now, dog, are we allowed to, you know, are there lines on this stuff that we can, you know, talk about?
Well, I mean, you can talk over under on like durations. What are you talking about?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
I mean match. I mean match durations.
What's this guy's name? What Finn? What
Finn Balor. Balor? Finn Balor.
Finn Balor.
He's like Ukrainian or something.
All right,
yeah.
Finn Balor. Balor. Like, what's the money line on this guy?
He's like my about plus or minus 11:47 minutes. Maybe 11:47 or 12:27. About something
yeah,
like
I
that.
I like Balor. I like Balor here.
He's facing the big fat guy. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Balor's got a history of bowing out early in the tournament. But you know, we'll go with Balor. So, what are the big matches Sunday, dog? We got Roman Reigns. We got HHH. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah, we got an Italian guy and some guy with a big nose. I never heard of him.
Shane McMahon, is that Vince's kid? Is that the owner's kid? He's still wrestling?
So, yeah.
The owner's kid is still wrestling, this guy.
Yeah, I mean, he was gone for a while. He was doing, like, other things. He was, like, opening, like, the WHA or, like, the USFL
what,
or something.
This is what, the third or fourth Undertaker?
It's the more
fourth,
like the, like,
fourth guy?
Like, something fifth or fourth, yeah. I mean,
he's going to be on the fourth guy. I mean, there's no way this is still the same Undertaker from when
you should see his hair.
I mean, come on. Remember him? Those are the days, dog. I mean, those are the days of wrestling. I mean,
he was really pale.
The stuff they do now, I don't know. All right, why don't we take a few calls and, you know, we'll go from there. So let's see who we got up first. We got JD in Detroit. JD, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Big fan.
Nice Mickey jersey. Mickey.
Yeah, thanks, man. Hey, I got a question about WrestleMania. Wonder what you guys' take is on it. So, you know, the big main event, everyone's talking about interference and who's going to run in the Shane and Undertaker match. I want to know, what do you guys think? Do you think Deep Throat Ghoul is going to interfere in the main event of WrestleMania?
This guy, Joe, hang on. Get this guy out of here. Real good. You stand on the line for 2 hours.
Just tell.
Proud. You stand on the line for 2 hours and just to make a stupid joke and get laughed off the air. All right, let's go to the next one. We got Deep Throat Ghoul. Good dog. Give me a break. Is that, wait. That's an actual guy? Oh. All right. Well, Deep Throat Ghoul is a wrestler, I guess, dog.
He is.
All right. Sorry,
I didn't know either.
All right, let's go next. We got Glenn in the car. Glenn, how you doing?
Hey, Glenn.
I'm good. Glad to be here. First time, long time. You know, I think WWE really needs an infusion of talent right now because everyone's injured. They're like Tony Romo. It's a good thing they're in Dallas. They're always injured.
Do guys get injured in this? I thought it was fake. I thought the whole thing was a ruse. They get hurt?
Oh, Mikey, they get hurt. The trainers are bad, I mean, Mikey. Glenn, something's going on. They're always hurt.
Are they actually hurt, Glenn? Is it like, you know, storyline hurts?
Can't teach a guy how to fall. You want to teach a guy how to fall? You think you can teach a guy how to fall?
Do they try and teach him how to fall? I don't know. I've never been to the training thing. I have no idea how this works.
You can't teach him how to fall.
I don't get it.
They fall. Mikey, they fall. It's like high. I mean, high. We're not talking like, you know, like Lutez, you know?
Yeah, I don't
Lutez.
Get it.
Remember he used to play for the Dodgers? Lutez?
So dog, I've been reading up on this website, Place to Be Nation, right? So I've been reading this thing, and they got all these pieces, right, about I read this piece by this guy. I don't know. I mean, he seems okay. He seems a little dense. The Stephen Graham guy. So I've been reading up this piece, and it's all about Shane McMahon, the guy, the owner's son, and The Undertaker. So I read up to see what this feud and this match was all about, and I'm reading it, and they got this thing of this lockbox and this hatred, and then they're fighting over the company. I mean, what are you doing? This is the main event of WrestleMania, fight over the company? What happened to the titles? Hey, Stax Calhoun! How do you
understand.
Do that at the biggest show of the year in Dallas?
What are you going to do?
How do you have a match about a lockbox?
Did he coach UConn, Haystacks, Calhoun?
It makes no sense.
He retired.
Fight over control of the company. Give me a break.
I think he retired.
All right, we got Brad and Philly on the line. Brad, I can't believe it, dog. What happened? What happened to Anthony O'Rocca? Those are the days. So me and my
Brad, welcome to the show, Brad.
Go down at Madison Square Garden.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask you guys, is Hulk Hogan going to be there? I'm trying to understand, you know, why he's not in the main event. And, I mean, if Vince and Vince's kid, you know, like, is Hulk Hogan going to be there, guys? I mean, I know he just got a big win. I mean, he's a great guy. And
Jimmy,
you know,
is Hulk Hogan on the show? Is Hulk Hogan there? I haven't heard of Hulk.
He's going to have some legal issues, you know.
Is he?
When you got to get out there.
I don't know.
Get out in front of it.
You know,
out in front of it!
I spent some time with Hogan at a golf tournament 15 years. He seemed like a nice guy. I kind of lost track of him, though. He's still...
You don't want to know what's going on.
Hulk Hogan. That's the same guy?
He's got to get in front of it.
It's not like The Undertaker, where there's been a few of them.
What else you got, Brad?
All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in a moment, right after the Flash of Mink. We'll be right back.
How did Yokozuna not fire Mr. Fuji immediately?
Worst manager ever. He really is. Worst manager. Him and Frenchie Martin. Taker Boss Man. So Taker's kind of weird on this list, right? He's got a bunch in the bottom and then a bunch on the top, not much in the middle. He's either been really good or real bad. And I didn't want to talk about that match, any memories of it. And because for a long time, that was considered, like, you know, arguably the worst match in WrestleMania history, and it's now been surpassed. You know, when the most memorable spot is the Brood hanging the Big Boss Man after the match. I mean, I don't remember much from the match itself, other than it being super disappointing, but...
Yeah, it's very plodding. I mean, Taker versus Bossman on paper really doesn't sound that bad to me. Sounds like a could be a pretty cool slugfest, Hoss type match, but this one just didn't have any heat, any energy. I think WrestleMania 15 being known as kind of one of the worst WrestleManias quality wise. It's easy to kind of pick the worst match on that card and say, well, this is kind of justification for a pretty bad card quality-wise in ring across the board. So that doesn't help it either. But it's very long again and very heatless and just not a lot going on. I watched it about 6 months ago, and it's a chore to sit through for sure.
I think what hurts it too is the alignment. You know, Scott, what do you think of that? Like, there's no face heel drawn in the sand on this one. So it was, the whole feud was convoluted with the corporation, the ministry. And this kind of is like the shining beacon of it all. It's like, you know, here we go. Who's the heel? They're both heels. Who are we cheering? And there's two guys plotting through the Cell match. And to me at the time too, it felt like Cell overload. Like they fell in love with it quickly in 98 and like, oh, another one already at Mania. And it's like, do these guys really, like, did they really need a Cell match for this feud? Just, I don't know. It felt way too much.
Yeah, I think they wanted something with that had a good visual, and that match, you know, the Cell at the time was a shiny new toy. But I agree with you that the key problem here is they really didn't differentiate the sides until after Mania, and even then, of course, it got confusing, and then the higher power and all that crap. So clearly, the problem here is who do you root for? I mean, Taker. Other than looking really cool with the new beard and the robe and all that stuff, you really didn't know what to invest yourself in. And like Chad said, you were hoping for just two hosses pummeling each other, and that didn't even happen. And then hanging Boss Man off the roof, and it was not good, and it was nothing could have been done because the feud hadn't really been established yet for something like that seemed to be. A highlight match ended up not being because it was so confusing in terms of who to invest yourself in. You know, people, I think, just rooted for Taker because it was Taker, you know. So
anyone else have any other thoughts on Taker Boss Man?
Well, it's just funny because go on.
Oh, no. So I was just going to say that we don't need to dwell on it too much, but that's one where the Cell that it really did hinder it because they probably could have hidden Taker and Boss Man's weaknesses there with a lot of brawling around ringside, run-ins from random ministry and corporation guys. But instead they, you know, like you guys said, had this fetish about putting the stupid Cell up. So now you lock them in the thing and all they can do is plot around. Although it does lead to one of the great moments ever in commentary in WrestleMania when Michael Cole comments that one of the main dangers of the Hell in a Cell is you could get your finger stuck inside the fencing. And King totally calls him out on it after what we saw in every other Cell match, but great moment there. That's the only reason why I would put it maybe a step higher than it was. It might be better than the Uncle Elmer match just for that reason.
The interesting thing with the Cell too, not only, like you said, hindering it along the lines of you know, not allowing them to do more bells and whistles, but also the fact that it raised expectations because all the Cell matches to that point, sure, you know, which had been Shawn and Taker, Foley Taker, and then a couple thrown in on Raw, had all seen some pretty wild stuff. So you're kind of like, all right, well, you know, it's Taker Boss Man, but the Cell means they're going to give us something crazy, and then they just didn't. It was just a boring match inside Steel. So that, you know, really hurt things. Jordan, we mentioned the Glenn Butler show, him and Scott, that you joined, Scott Butler. The Descent, the all-time match ranking Descent show. And what they did was they broke down the list and kind of gave their thoughts on it and why they thought we were wrong in many spots. And one of them seemed to be Scott's infatuation with Uncle Elmer and the love he had for him. This is from what I could glean from the chat. I haven't heard the show yet because it just went up today. But tell us a little bit about why the argument exists for Uncle Elmer to be up higher on this list instead of where he belongs in the bottom 10.
Uncle Elmer is actually their birth father. No, that's not it. No, it's really just a simplistic explanation that Scott made. Now, Glenn did not support this in any way, but basically Scott's first memory of professional wrestling was Uncle Elmer.
And like, he stuck the first with match it, huh?
ever. Yeah, the first match you ever watched was an Uncle Elmer match where he just kept smacking some dude around with his big gut, and it was his favorite wrestler from then on.
Oh,
so
God.
That's about it.
You feel a little less worse, Chad, about my enjoyment of Undertaker Giant Gonzalez when Uncle Elmer was this guy's first love?
I don't remember exactly, but I think he said it would be in his top 50 matches.
Oh my Lord.
Come on.
And he had so many of the top ones that wouldn't make like his top 250.
Wait, hold on a minute. Top 50 ever?
Top WrestleMania 50 ever. Matches.
Yeah.
Uncle Elmer and Adrian Adonis. In the top 50 greatest matches ever
in WrestleMania history.
You know, the Butler brothers have their own unique tastes, and that's what I love about them. So.
Yeah, that opinion is almost as preposterous as thinking that Hogan versus Andre is a great match.
We're getting there. We're getting there, Chad.
Teasing the finale. I think Elmer Adonis is too high on our list. I don't know.
Well, the funny thing is, as he's discussing the match, he points out how Uncle Elmer, it's what, like 2 minutes long, and Uncle Elmer falls down throwing a punch. And he points out as a positive of the match that Adonis has to stall while this fat schlub gets back to his feet.
Adonis is not the fat schlub in a match in 1986.
Yeah, right. Right, he was the workhorse in that one. I hate the Hillbillies. Oh, I hate Elmer. I hate them all.
Well, that's some northern bias coming through.
Top 50?
No, I think that he said something along those lines. He said that about a few matches. I maybe
don't bail him out. Don't bail him out, Jordan. Don't bail him out.
I mean, there's.
I have to. I'm gonna have to invade the Butler show.
So our number 50 match is Diesel and Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 11. So he thinks he's at least better than that.
If I may say though, if you've listened to it, I listened to it. I really liked the show, but he hadn't watched that WrestleMania.
Oh, okay.
So obviously it would go at the bottom.
This also could be like the latest rank and file where Jordan had 25 title changes in his top 10.
That's true.
All of them made my list. All 3A, the ones that you 3B, thought should have been 3C. On there were on mine.
Yeah, and he didn't even have a list, so that was even more of a conundrum.
All right, I'm going to tell everyone our top 13 here, because I think this is where we're going to really get into the debate. And this is the matches that we considered the GOAT. And the one right outside looking in, which drew some ire from a poster on Graham Cawthon's Facebook page, was Shawn Michaels' Kurt Angle. That was our number one non-GOAT match. That was right below the cut line. So, you know, Chad and Stephen Graham are grinning and making out in the tree after hearing that one. So that didn't quite, you know, reach up. That was right below. So here are our GOATs. We had number 13 was Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar from last year. And I think that one probably brought some of the most, I don't want to say snickering, but I know I've seen comments about how could you have that there, but also within our own group kind of debating where that fits. I mean, some people had it as high as they were saying top three or four. If you heard the latest Dangerous Alliance, Will had it. We ranked all the WrestleMania main events, and he had it, I think, was it number one?
I think it was his number one.
He had it number one, yeah.
Yeah, so, and then we had Hulk Hogan, Ultimate Warrior, at number 12. We had Daniel Bryan, Triple H, at 11. Razor Ramon, Shawn Michaels at 10. Randy Savage, Ric Flair at 9. Hulk Hogan and The Rock at 8. Steve Austin and The Rock at 7 from WrestleMania 17. That's another one that drew some debate. Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, our White Whale, was at number 6. Randy Savage, Ricky Steamboat at 5. Bret versus Owen at 4. Undertaker, Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania 25 at 3. Warrior Savage from WrestleMania 7 at 2. And then Bret Hart, Steve Austin from WrestleMania 13 was our greatest WrestleMania match of all time. So there were a couple of debates that we saw from readers out there. One was around, Savage Steamboat not being the greatest match of all time. Some people still kind of cling to that because it was for a long time in many people's eyes. The biggest argument we had within our group was the placement of Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. and a couple other ones like Randy Savage, Ric Flair was a debate. And then, you know, we pretty much knew our top one, but we did have some discussions whether Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage should be our greatest WrestleMania match of all time because of the story involved with it. It fell second, not by much, but that's where we landed. Andy, when you look at the top 13, what was your biggest gripe on the list? And what was the one match that you were kind of like, you felt should have been maybe higher or lower that we ended up kind of going against the grain for you?
Well, one that I felt kind of should have been lower, but I didn't really argue, was last year, the Brock and Roman match. I thought it was really good, and I even liked the cash-in at the end. But I think it's kind of too early to say if it's like, greatest of all time.
So anyone want to speak up? We don't have Mark Clare on. I think he was the biggest proponent of this match. He's the one that wanted it. Like even way higher, but anyone on here feel that it was too low, or do you think everyone agreed that it was kind of either properly rated, or with Andy that you thought it was too high?
I'd have it at number 6, personally. Just on my personal list, I think it's my favorite main event in WrestleMania history, as far as the last match as well. And I think it was just a brilliant battle that really towards the end, and I'm someone that doesn't actually like the cash-in and think in retrospect it looks even worse than it did last year after the event. But towards the end where Roman makes his comeback, I think that match kind of reaches a visceral hatred level that really few matches in WWE history have reached. Kind of compare it to Randy Orton versus Mick Foley at Backlash 2004. I think there's that kind of that palpable hate that you get from both people and really feel like Roman Reigns is overcoming the odds and is kind of rocking this beast that had looked unstoppable up to that point. I mean, Brock, for all his faults, since he lost to Triple H at WrestleMania 29, had been booked really damn well for 2 years. And Roman, throughout all the crowd backlash as it was going into the waning moments of the end of that match, the crowd was starting to rally behind him when he was doing that great flurry of punches and Brock was staggering around. It was an electric moment, and that's just a match that really hit me emotionally and felt like a battle. Really shocked me. I mean, I thought it'd be good to very good going in. I didn't think it'd be garbage. But I never thought it'd be like for a star rating for me, it's 4.75. And that's something I never would have dreamed going into the show last year.
And you almost have to wonder too, if, looking back, do they really regret not just putting the belt on Reigns going off of that match? Right. Saved them a lot of the hassle that they ended up going through.
Right.
Through the rest of the year. Scott, looking at this, where would you have had Reigns and Lesnar a year later? Would it have checked in as high for you, or do you think it's kind of appropriately related? Rated.
I would not have had this match as a GOAT. I probably would put it lower all time, higher great. Match didn't blow me away. It was good. Great, borderline all time, but I would not make it a GOAT. I would have moved up. There's at least three choices between in your all time group that I would have put up in the GOAT.
What are they?
To replace it. I would have put Benoit, Triple H, and Shawn. I would have put the Taker Shawn sequel, and I would have put Batista Taker from 23.
All right, so let's talk about those three. Anyone want to, does anyone vouch with Scott that one of those three or all those three should have been higher into the GOAT category?
The only thing I would say is that, the only one that would come close, and it's only on live watch, would have been the triple threat, because, the big draw of, for me anyway, with Reigns Lesnar, and I think it's about right in where it is, but the big draw is the pure catharsis and how much you're drawn in, and I think only Benoit's win at the time had that level of commitment on as pertains to me as a viewer. Undertaker and Shawn is great, but you're not on the edge of your seat as much as the other two, I feel.
I also
agree that the three-way should be higher. I think what really hurts that is the obvious, the whole Benoit situation. And I mean, honestly, I'm just asking you guys, how many of you guys have even rewatched that since Benoit, or especially have you ever sat down and said, I really want to watch that great three-way? Probably nobody's ever going to say that. So I think that hurts it, because you've seen so many of these great matches so many times that it just makes them seem better in your eyes.
Yeah, I mean, it's – yeah, go ahead, Aaron.
Well, I was just going to say, I think we're doing lists like this too, though. It is really important to try to contextualize it by remembering how you were feeling watching it. I think that's actually very important. So even if you are rewatching it, I think you have to give value to the mark out moment of it.
Right.
I think that'll come into play later when we talk about Hogan Andre, but go on.
If you watch this match now and go in with the fact that Chris Benoit is a murderer, I mean, right. It should be the worst match on this list, because, whatever. But yeah, there's no doubt that when the match took place that, I actually watched that WrestleMania at a Hooters, and I mean, it felt like a culmination of your life as an internet wrestler.
We do not want to know what was culminating in Hooters.
Culmination of Chad becoming a man.
With deep throat ghoul right beside me. It was a...
I culminated right when he was tapping out.
Thanks for running my moment. My internet
you get plenty of moments.
What a shit show.
Yeah, well, I mean, Scott and I were there at that one, and it was awesome. I mean, it was a super memorable moment. But when I look at the 15 above it, I do think there's just it has nothing to do with what happened after. And I have rewatched it since a couple times, mainly for Scott and I when we did the podcast. you know, it still holds up. And I'm, you know, I'm one that can kind of I can never say the word, but I can separate, you know, what Benoit did with watching his matches. Like, I'm not a fan. I don't live to watch Benoit matches, but for the fact of doing our reviews and podcasts and stuff, I could put it on and be fine. Like, it doesn't mess with me too much. I just think there are some holes in that match that keep it there. I think there's some slow spots. I think there's some kind of wonky spots. The pure emotion, and I think it's curious because another match that we really debated heavily was Daniel Bryan and Triple H. You know, I think there's a lot of the similar emotion there where he finally beats Triple H and moves on to the main event, and also him, Orton, and Batista. Where does that fall into line? Because you can say in many ways it's, you know, 10 years later, almost the same situation to Benoit, Triple H, Michaels. You finally have Bryan breaking through the glass ceiling. You have it against two established guys that the crowd just did not want any part of. It was this awesome celebration moment. And it's, you know, it's jarring because to see where Daniel Bryan's career is, you know, not that it went to the point that Benoit's did, but still didn't end well after that. And that they were exactly 10 years apart and they were this big crowning moment. It's kind of weird in many ways to see where they both ended up after those moments. But
I think the interesting comparison with Triple H Bryan is Hart.
Yes.
I think that's the really interesting one that I don't hear talked about too much. And I think they're a lot closer than people want to admit. Like for me, on any given day, I might put one above the other. And I know that kind of sounds crazy, but like just the stakes and the crowd and like just the atmosphere of Bryan, Triple H, and Stephanie screaming at ringside, like, no one does it like you. And like she's just so gross. And it just adds to such a wonderful atmosphere. Like, I mean, I think
she's so gross.
She is. Like, she's got this smarmy sex look. Like nobody does it like you. And she's wearing that tight skirt. And, like, the steroids are popping out of her face. Like,
and then it was time to culminate.
I always remember him like doing the little nose thing at the beginning, her and Triple H.
I want to go around the horn. Triple H, Daniel Bryan, Bret Owen. Those are your two matches. You have to put one, two, not number one, number two, but rank the two of them. Tell me which one you advocate for over the other. So, Neil, let's start with you.
I'm going Bret and Owen higher just because Triple H and Daniel Bryan was kind of a foregone conclusion. Everybody knew pretty much that Bryan was winning it. And, I mean, I became a fan in 1993, so Bret and Owen was like, I've seen that match 500 times, so that's just my childhood right there.
Yeah, and that was the argument, too, that when we were debating those two that I was making as well, was that Owen's win in many ways, I don't want to say meant more, but it was definitely a bigger surprise. Like, going in, I think Bret Owen seemed like it was going to be like Daniel Bryan, Triple H, where Bret would win, no surprise. He'd move on and then fight for the title in the main event, and that would be it. I don't think anyone, unless you were super in the know or just on a different level of smart fan thinking in 1994, you know, saw an Owen push coming. To me, it felt like a time-filling feud to get Bret to Mania, and then he would just dispatch of Owen and go win the belt. So that was my reasoning because I had it higher, too. How about you, Andy?
I'm just like Neil. WrestleMania 10 was like the first WrestleMania I saw on pay-per-view. And like Bret Hart was my guy, so I have to go with that one higher. Just because of I'm so connected to that show, I guess.
JD?
I'll go the opposite. I'll put Triple H and Bryan higher. I think it feels like a bigger match. I think that... For me, it's more of an emotional investment, and I think Stephanie is like the tipping point as well. I think if you're kind of counting beans on a scale, I think Stephanie tips it in the favor, and I don't think it goes back the other way.
How about you, Chad?
I have Bret Owen higher, but Scott, hang on to your hat. But to me, Triple H, Daniel Bryan is the best Triple H match of all time, just in my opinion.
Scott, did your hat blow off or did you hang on to it?
I hung on to it, but still, I'm very impressed, Chad. But I actually would have Bret and Owen higher, because as much as I like that Triple H match, there's other Triple H matches I like better. But I just think the Bret and Owen match is in a class all its own, just for historical purposes. It's one of those matches you just, it needs to be in your top five, just because the chemistry, the storyline, the garden, what would happen at the end of the night. Everything surrounding that match is practically perfect from every perspective. So as much as I like Bryan and Triple H, Bret Owen is in a class all its own with a very select few.
So I think it's the two big Triple H and Stephanie haters because they see them get their comeuppance by Daniel Bryan put this one higher, Jordan and Eric.
Well, what's funny is I think everything Scott said is why I would list Bryan and Triple H. You know, the storyline, the environment, the Superdome. You know, I think what would happen at the end of the night. Those are all the reasons I would list Bryan and Triple H. It's interesting.
Well, it's funny because to me, like, Bryan had already – it was an awesome story, and it was great. But when you look at it holistically – he had already been world champion. He had already beaten John Cena, which was his big win at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
He was downgraded. They tried to push him to the back a couple times. The fans, sure, organically brought him back. And that night, I'll never take it away. It was unbelievable. It was awesome. And this is in no way taking away from that. But when you look at the Bret Owen story, it feels so much more natural. The build. Owen had never reached that point, and it made him a star. To me, Daniel Bryan was already a star. Even if he didn't get that moment at WrestleMania 30, look at what the crowds did. Like, he was already a star in the fans' eyes. When you look at that Rumble, the Raw in Providence, of the Cage, like, he was already there. This made Owen Hart. Now you can say, well, what did Owen do afterwards? Well, I mean, it established him as a main event player for years to come and set him up to be one of the biggest players in 97 in the Hart Foundation. I mean, you can say he did more with his than what, unfortunately, Bryan ended up doing with his win. So, you know, snapshot in time, it's an awesome moment. But to me, when you look at the organic build of Bret Owen that started a Survivor Series, goes to the Rumble, Bret refusing to fight his brother, he finally gives in, and then Owen fucking beats him on the big stage to make his name. Like, not only does he finally beat his older brother that, in his mind, had held him down all these years, he does it on the biggest stage of the, you know, the biggest stage of his career for the biggest win of his career, and then sets him up immediately as a world title contender, too. Like, to me, that was, when I put that all together, the whole package just meant a little bit more to me than it did for the Bryan Triple H.
See, it just depends on if that legacy of Owen, which I think you're correct on, is worth more than the total package of that match. Because I was starting to build something earlier in the year, and these were two matches I was looking at, and as I was looking at it, it was like, okay, crowd. It's got to be the Triple H Bryan. Stakes, it's Triple H Bryan. Storyline, it's very similar, like, in terms of, like, where it is. What it impacted on the rest of the show, it's the same. And then the in-ring is very similar. They can't be any more different as matches,
right,
but they're very similar. So it's like, what do you personally value more? You know, like, and that's why I kind of go back and forth on them, because I love Bret Owen. Like, it's one of my favorite matches of all time. But the amount of the fact that that crowd was so rabid and so on the edge of their seats, and that match mattered so much. Whereas, like, the Bret Owen match, as much as it wasn't a foregone conclusion, it also didn't matter. Like, it didn't, like, I mean, yes, it built Owen long run, but, like, there's not really any stakes in that match, short of pride, which means something, but... like, it's not the same as the guy fighting for the belt against, like, he beat Cena, but Triple H was his enemy.
Right.
Right. And that's what propelled him forward. And I don't know. Like, I don't know if I'd actually advocate that. I don't know if I'd put it ahead. Maybe not. But I just think they're really close.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, I think by the time we really get into the heavy debate on those two, we had gone too far down the process that we had done.
Yeah.
To say it should be higher. I mean, I think if we're kind of looking at this again, that's probably one of the ones I'd say, well, you could tick it a bit higher. But then I start looking, and this is where it got real hard for me, because I'm like, yeah, I feel Bryan Triple H should be probably next to Bret and Owen because they're so similar. But, man, what do I put it above? You know, the ladder match, okay, probably, maybe. But, you know, Savage Flair, I think, is maybe too low. But that's another one I look at. Well, what would I move it above? Hogan Rock? Yeah, I mean, one of the, you know, greatest moments in WrestleMania history. Austin Rock? I mean, me personally, yes, I'd probably have Austin Rock even lower, but I understand why it can't be. And then you get to that top six, and it's kind of like, well, where is it? So I almost feel like those are locked in that slot, those 8, 9, 10 slot. It's like, I don't know what else I would move down to move those up, even though I feel like they should be higher. I mean, I think that tells you we're in the rarefied air, you know?
Yeah, and I think if anything, and this might sound crazy, for me, Hart moves down.
Right.
Like, as opposed – like, I mean, I think Brian and Triple H might move up, but I think Hart also moves down.
Yeah.
But again, that's me.
All right. So I don't think we had much debate in general over our number one and two match, and that was Bret Hart, Austin, Warrior, Savage. I mean, I think we pretty much knew going in those would be around the top two. Undertaker, Michaels in there as well. Aaron, though, you were kind of on a limb with your Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant argument. You know, when we first started doing the list, we had talked about not even having it in the GOAT category. You pushed, and I think others, you know, eventually agreed and said, okay, I think it belongs in there for the reasons we laid out when we built this list, why we think it should be considered on that level. You know, you were advocating it even higher, and then others were saying, you're nuts, this shouldn't even be where it is. And eventually we agreed on number six. Now, Chad had to jump off, so he's not here. I know he was one of the people that felt like it's too high. But I want to save your thoughts for last. I want to get everyone else's view, sure. And then you can give your defense. So, Andy, where did you think Hogan Andre, when you first looked, you know, when you first entered into building your list, where would you have put it? And then after you read all the arguments and all the discussion we had, did you agree on where it ended up?
I probably would have had it down as kind of like just a token match, kind of down in the 30s or something.
And how about even after we just had all the discussion and argument and everything? Do you still feel like we ended up with it too high?
Yeah, I probably would have put it like right at number 10 maybe.
Okay. So the arguments at least swayed you to get it up into the top 10 from the 30s?
Yeah, because what you guys were saying, everybody was saying with all the storylines, how it is an awesome storyline. And I've actually seen all the videos and stuff with, like, Jesse Ventura, like, provoking the guys. And then I just think that storyline was pretty cool. So, yeah, like, I agreed to bump it up because of that.
How about you, JD?
I think this match, I think this is the poster example of why a WrestleMania ranking is different than just a greatest match ranking. Because when we're talking about at WrestleMania, you got to factor in more than just bell rings to start the match, bell rings to end the match. You know what I mean? And I think this is the prime example of, you know, what makes a great match. Because, you know, when you look at everything surrounding it, work rate wise, and I'm using quotation marks as I say that, it gets lapped by everything else, but it's the match that had no intention of stealing the show or being the best move-for-move match, you know. And it's really hard. I think this is one of the hardest ones to rank because for me personally, it wouldn't be at the top of my list. My number one and two are the number one and two on our list, Hart and Austin, Warrior Savage, although I probably would flip-flop and put Warrior Savage first. For me, what it finally boiled down to, why I dropped it a little lower, is kind of, okay, if I want to watch a match, what match am I likely to watch again? And I just don't know that I'll want to watch Hogan Andre anytime soon. And so that's kind of was like the determining factor when I had a couple tough matches to pick from. Which one would I more likely watch again sometime soon? And that one was always the second choice. So I think having it at six, probably a little high for me, but I understand why it is where it is, and especially where it's lumped with Austin and Rock and Hogan Rock. Those three matches all kind of are the same thing in a way, and that's way bigger than the other two, I think. So I think it has to be ahead of them.
It's funny because going into building this list, I didn't expect it to have it this high, and then I found myself on Dangerous Lions defending it against Will, who wanted it like last, you know, and I had to argue just to get it to 15 on his list, and that was just main events. That wasn't even like title matches or WrestleMania, you know, that was just WrestleMania main events, where I think you could argue it slides in much higher on that list when you look at some of the main events that are out there.
Well, in our list, it is the top main event.
Right. So there you go.
Which is interesting.
Yeah, that is. That's a good point, Aaron. So yeah,
but it's not even the top match from its own show.
Right. Yeah. Which, you
know, which is bullshit.
Right. All right, we'll get to you, Aaron. Chill out.
Yeah,
one second.
I know.
Neil, how about you?
I think as far as what the match had the potential to be, like what it was, it is 5 stars perfect. I mean, that you couldn't have done that any better. But the way I choose to look at it, it's kind of like if you imagine having the greatest Big Mac that McDonald's has ever made. It might be the greatest Big Mac, but it's still not a T-bone steak. You know, I it's great for what it is and what it could be, but I don't know how ahead of how many of these just absolutely perfectly worked match as we can put it, because at the end of the day, it's still a wrestling match. So if it's going to be on the top of a greatest of all time list, it should at least be a pretty good wrestling match.
I can feel Aaron trembling. Scott, how about you?
I'm gonna definitely jump on my Canadian cohort's bandwagon. Because I gotta be honest with you, I don't think you can, when it comes to Hogan Andre, I don't think you can really rank it. Like, I mean, I love you, Neil, but I think you're totally downplaying the importance of this match. To me, I don't think this match should even be discussed with any other main event in the history of WrestleMania, because if this one didn't fail, if this main event failed, there wasn't going to be a 4 through 31. That's how important this match is. And I think we got to kind of, this is one of those rare instances where you have to sweep the work rate under the rug. All right? It's not 5 stars. Well, who gives a crap that it's not 5 stars? Because it's the capper of at the time, the most important show in the history of professional wrestling. And I think the that alone puts it in rarefied air with these other matches.
I mean, it's a definition.
Is it number one? No, it's not number one. But it's it definitely belongs in the greatest of all time, because we wouldn't have this list would be very short if it wasn't.
I mean, and it's the definition of a big time money main event match, right?
Exactly. And the work rate of the show is already up here and represented in the greatest of all time. So it's okay to put that on here too. So.
And yeah, I'm not arguing that it should be like number 250.
Blow a kilometer,
I'm just saying that I don't know if it's quite that high. Mm-hmm. Is my point.
All right, you know, what I think is kind of interesting is the same match from WrestleMania 4 is ranked 243.
Right.
You know.
Well, it's funny because we keep saying work rate. The 3 match, destroys WrestleMania 4 just in the ring, even. I mean, take away all the ambiance, the build, the atmosphere, like take away all of that. If you just watch those 2 matches in a vacuum, the work they do in 3 like blows away 4. You know, 4 is a mess.
Mm-hmm. And
this is why, Aaron, it's your turn, but I like your argument, because Aaron doesn't sit here and, his argument differs from Scott. Scott's argument is, I don't give a shit about the work rate. This match is so huge and unbelievable. It has to be this high. Aaron, your argument is that, like, the work rate is high, right? Because that's all they needed. They did what they needed to do, right? I mean, that's your viewpoint.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I agree with Scott about all his points about how, I mean, that goes for the match too, right? Like, that it is probably the most important match of all time and so on and so forth. But to me, like, when we talk about work rate, we have to look at, like, what the purpose of a wrestling match is. Like, what are we doing here? Like, if the purpose of a match is to have the crowd rabid the entire time and to tell a story and to tell a compelling story that people are into and to create moments that, I'm going to sound like the shill for the WWE home video, but like that last a lifetime, then the work rate in this match is perfect. Like, they don't make mistakes in the match. And they make the most of every single moment. From the moment they step towards each other, everything is perfect. And this match tells a story. It's a simple story. It's a story that he can't get him off his feet and he's trying everything. And he'll get a bit of momentum and then it gets taken away. But listen to the crowd. Like, I would argue that maybe more than any other match in our greatest of all time, the crowd reaction is just insane to everything. Listen to the pop when he breaks out of a bear hug. Like, that's how much they're behind him. And so, like, because, like we, I don't need Hulk Hogan doing moonsaults for him to have a 5-star match. I need him to get me invested in what the match is. And they did that with the build, and they did that in the match. Could Andre not move? Sure. But it didn't matter, because all he had to do was step on him. And we were scared that Hogan, all he had to do was step on him, and we were scared that Hogan was going to lose the title. All he had to do was do a false body slam moment, and we were petrified that he was going to lose the title. And, like, to me, that's what a great wrestling match is. Like, look at Warrior Savage. Warrior Savage, to me, is, like, the work rate's good, but, like, would I look at it in terms of work rate as good as even Bret Owen or even Michaels Angle, which is lower in our list? probably not, like in terms of technical stuff. Like they don't do as many moves, but the story they tell in the ring is perfect. And so, like, to me, that is the T-bone steak. Like it's a perfect match. And like, I feel too, the argument that like it's not the best match on the show is kind of a false argument. Like, because like I said, again, like, what was the purpose of a match? It's to get people involved and to get people to remember these things. And like, I don't know how much of the Ricky Steamboat, Randy Savage stealing the show is not so much a narrative that came much later. Because at the time, I don't remember anyone leaving where I was watching talking about Ricky Steamboat and Randy Savage. It was all, oh my God, he slammed the fucking giant. Right? Which even that is arguably the greatest wrestling moment of all time. And when you factor all those things in, like, I wouldn't personally put it at number one, but I think there's definitely an argument to be made that it could be number one because it's the highest grossing. It's the most important. And both guys, I think they went higher than their potential because, again, it's all the little things. It's all the little moments, the pain in Hogan's face, the stare down where, like, you tell Hogan's talking to him, the commentary where Gorilla Monsoon sounds like he's legitimately marking out with, look at this, right before he slams him. And the insane pop is, to me, it's perfect. It's just perfect. I don't know what more I can say than that.
Well, it's interesting, too, because like you said, the argument there for it to be number one, it's almost like, well, if your argument is what it is, Aaron, and you're not basing it just on the perceived work rate where, you know, it is what it is, kind of a pedantic match, it should be lower. Once you put it in this GOAT bucket because of those reasons, I think the leap to making it the best match of all time is quick, right? I mean, it's easy because it's here because of all those factors. Well, and I mean, it tops everything else. So, you know,
and all those factors eclipse all the other ones.
Right.
Like, the problem is it's not close.
So I wanted to talk quickly about Savage Steamboat, and then I want to leave, because we only got a few minutes left. I want to leave time for everyone to kind of give their one gripe. But Savage Steamboat was kind of a hot button today in some of the discussion around it. And just like we did for Bret Owen, Triple H, Daniel Bryan, I want to go around the horn. You tell me which of the two you'd have higher and a quick why. Neil, Savage Steamboat, Hogan, Andre. I mean, I think most of us are probably going to lean the same way, but what is your reasoning why? You know, what'd you have higher and why?
I think I had Savage Steamboat higher just for the lasting effect of the work rate and the future work rate guys that it brought about. But it's an argument either way. And Aaron's argument he just made may have turned me on it. I might be going Hogan Andre higher now.
Do you see any way Savage Steamboat would still be the greatest match in WrestleMania history?
No.
Okay. How about you, Andy?
Well, I was the one arguing for Savage and Steamboat to go higher, and now I'm kind of like Neil. I'm kind of like why? But like, I still kind of think that I've seen some of those documentaries where, like, I think Jericho and the Hardy Boys, I think they said that they were like kids and they saw that match and they were like, I think trying to recreate Savage and Steamboat, you know, in their living room with their pillows and stuff. So I think that that inspired a whole like generation. So
do you see any argument where it'd be number one still?
Yeah, I'm going to keep it higher, I guess. Yeah.
How about you, JD?
I'd put Hogan Andre ahead of it because when you look at both of them and kind of what they were meant to do, and obviously they were set very different purposes. I feel like other matches have gone out with the Hogan Andre formula, two massive stars in the massive main event of the show. And I don't think anything's ever eclipsed it or passed it. Whereas Savage Steamboat is, you know, steal the show, best match of the show, elevate a new star type thing. And I think other matches in WrestleMania history have come close to that or maybe even done that better. Whereas Hogan Andre's formula hasn't been done better yet. So for that reason, I'd put Hogan Andre ahead of Savage Steamboat.
All right, Scott, WrestleMania 3 is your wheelhouse. What do you have here?
Oh, you can give me any list, any category, and Savage Steamboat will always be number one to me.
Cool.
So would you argue can you make an argument like the person did on Grand Space today that it should still be the greatest match of all time?
Yeah, it absolutely. Absolutely. Everything about it. Just as great a story. Hogan Andre was just about, I mean, Hogan Andre storyline is fantastic. This is different. You know, Savage tried to end Steamboat's career. I mean, he, you know, the draped larynx on the railing, and Savage is such a piece of trash, and Steamboat just such a sympathetic character. And then they go out and put on a match that I don't think anybody really thought they would, because going into that match, you know, Savage still had to shake off the Memphis crap of, you know, stalling and dawdling and walking around the ring and all that kind of stuff. And instead, he puts on a match that ends up making him a legend. And that can never be duplicated. I don't think we've ever seen to this point a guy who went into a WrestleMania match with the reputation of having been a mediocre worker and left a WrestleMania match being one of the greatest of all time. I don't think you've seen that yet.
So if you're making this list on your own, that is your number one?
Yes. Okay. Yep.
Interesting.
Yep.
All right, guys. Let's I want to wrap up in a minute, but let's do this. Give me your one. I'm going to go around the horn again. Give me your one takeaway from the project, and also if there's any major gripe you had that you believe a match should have been higher or lower overall on the list, and also just your thoughts on working the project. Jordan?
Overall thoughts, there's a lot of matches I don't remember. A lot of mid-card matches that, we have this idea that WrestleMania is, you know, every match is significant, but obviously in the grand scheme of things, that's not true. That's one thing I've noticed when you're trying to rank, you know, Haku versus Hercules. Is that better than, you know, some match from WrestleMania 16, you know? Right. That was really hard to do. The one that I would change drastically, and I know that I might be out on an island here, is I really, really don't like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 12. I think it was, you know, it was in the top 50, maybe even the top 40 for us. I don't even think it'd be my top 100.
That's another very divisive match. You know, you'll see some out there that believe it should still be in the top 10 or 15, and there are others that believe it should be way lower. We had it at 38. So I think it's a little low. You know, I see a few right off the top I would have had it higher than. But I like it. I just rewatched it, and I like it. I think its reputation has gone from overrated to underrated. I don't think it was ever been properly rated, that match, at all. it's either people were like gaga over it at the time and then went like, no, they hate it, because I think it got so much publicity from the company itself as the greatest match of all time and all this other stuff. And everyone's like, no, it's boring, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's, you know, I think it's somewhere in between. So maybe
the other thing I was wondering is, where did we put the first Cena Rock match?
We had
that. I didn't see that.
At 26.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Yeah, that, okay.
That's another one where I feel like it in my mind.
Could be,
yeah,
that could maybe be a little higher.
Well, that's one where I think the same thing. Like, let's put it higher. But then I look and I'm like, well, I don't know. You know, I got to start to look at what I'd drop, and I'm not sure. That happens a lot on this list. How about you, Andy?
For the final thoughts, I guess for one that I argued that I thought should have been higher was Austin and Shawn Michaels. I kind of thought that was kind of like. I guess maybe I'm younger, and so everybody's feelings with Hogan and Andre was kind of my feelings with, like, Steve Austin and his first championship, because that was kind of, like, huge when I was 14. And it might not have been a good match, but the storyline kind of made it for me with them adding in, like, Mike Tyson. But I know it's not, like, it's not going to be the greatest, but I thought the storyline kind of elevated that. And then another thought that I had was, you said, what do we take away from this? And I remember when I first started ranking these, I watched that Ultimate Warrior and Randy Savage match. And I started to believe that that could be the number one because I forgot just how good it was. Mm-hmm. And then a lasting thing from that is the turban guy, like, crying. I think that's...
I think if we did maybe next year we'll rank the most iconic moments in WrestleMania history. I think that's one of the most iconic images in Mania history.
The best thing about that guy is he looks like Pat from Saturday Night Live.
Neil, how about you? One kind of thing you'd, you know, disagree with, and then your just overall takeaway from the project.
Well, I can't believe that Randy Savage and Butch Reed is number 209. What were we thinking? No, I would have put Angle and Eddie higher, but that's maybe just my own personal bias. It's just a match that I love, and Savage Flair, I think I argued to get that one in the top five too. But as far as what I would take away from the project as a whole, it is pretty amazing when you talk to a group of people to see what people value the most. about a particular wrestling match and how we can all be watching the same thing and how it can mean something totally different to so many different people. It was a cool project to do. Let's never do it again, but it was cool to be a part of.
I mean, it was an energetic group. We'll talk about everyone who participated in a minute. But it was great seeing what everyone thought, and it was a lot of fun. I mean, a little bit of me wishes we started a little earlier too, because I feel like some of the arguing time got crunched at the end because we had to start building. I think we could have had more of a discussion. I also wish, you know, we had the time. I know we'll get thrown out a few times. Should we just all hop on a Skype call and argue it out? I wish we had the time to do that too, because I think that could have been a lot of fun if we all just jumped on and talked our way through it. Aaron, how about you?
I really liked doing this project. It was really cool. And like, what I liked about it is that like every argument we had was all from the perspective of opinion, which I think is, well, this is an opinion project, right? So it kind of has to be.
Right.
But I feel so often online, like it's like opinions become facts, and like I really dug it on that level, you know, like it was fun to do. And like, it was kind of scary how much I remembered so many of these matches. Like it wasn't that hard to rank Haku and Hercules. Like, I feel like just yesterday I was listening to those trumpets blare and him spinning that chain. Like, as far as gripe, as far as gripe, like, look, like, my stance is pretty clear on Triple H, but I really am not a fan of the WrestleMania 27 match. Which is weird because I actually really like the 28 match, and I really like the 17 match too, and I like him against Bryan. But I find the 27 match just doesn't make any sense as a match. Like, the whole match was predicated on Triple H needing to beat The Undertaker, and then he spends half the match screaming at him to stay down when he's already laying dead on the ground instead of pinning him. But it is an important match because it builds on the fact, like, it's important for the next year of the match that I like. You needed Triple H trying to murder him the year before to get the catharsis of Undertaker winning. But to me, that's one I would have put a lot lower, like bordering on the duds, because to me it was just so much time for something that wasn't making any sense.
And I think we did. I mean, I don't, you know, it's not gonna be that low, but I think relatively speaking, we did have it kind of low compared to what others may have. And we had it at 44, which is still.
I feel like I could have had two good fights with Chad right now.
He bailed right before things got hot. We have the Cell match at 24, so a good, you know, 20 spots, exactly 20 spots ahead. Yeah. Scott, what are your thoughts? Looking on the outside in of the project, the work that was done, and I know any major gripe you have, just, you know, glancing at the list as we've been talking.
Well, first off, I applaud you guys immensely. This is if you're going to do something like this, you got to do it right, and you got to go all the way with it. You can't half ass it. And so you guys did a fantastic job. I applaud you immensely. The only other match, I mean, everything in the GOAT, I like. I may not like the order. But I like all the matches in the GOAT except Brock and Reigns. I would put, there's a couple of choices. And as Jordan can attest to when we did rank and file, I just have such an incredible affinity for Batista and Taker from 23. I don't know if I put that in greatest of all time, but it's definitely higher on my all time than you guys have. Otherwise, every match you have in your GOAT, I agree with, except Brock and Reigns. So for the most part, I like pretty much all the others. You guys did a fantastic job. This is not something you take lightly. 300 matches, that's a lot of matches. And sitting through, you know, Ricky Steamboat and Hercules, or, you know, a myriad of hillbillies or midgets or both. And some of the dreck Diva matches in the early 2010s. You guys did a great job. So I applaud your efforts. So great job.
We had Batista Taker at 20. So there you go. All right. Yeah. So I want to give shout out to the guys that weren't on with us today, but also participated in building all this. That was Ben Moore, Smart Claire, Brian Bayless, Brian Meyer, and Glenn Butler. I think that's everyone. Everyone else is on here. So we had a great group again that were with us from start to finish. And like I said, it wasn't just building the list. It was also, you know, doing the write-ups. And, you know, I thank you guys, Andy and Aaron, that came in late and helped me finish up the write-ups. I think that was almost more important in some ways to give the rationale and the explanations of each match versus just making this a straight list. I mean, we could have just listed the matches and called it a day. But we sat there and we wrote up the reasoning why the matches fell like they did. So I want to thank you guys for joining us and celebrating with us here at episode 400. I do think there's a lot more information to mine on this list, so I think future episodes of this topic are due. I think we'll talk about it and have you guys back on and maybe almost go match by match or something like that. But Neil, Andy, and JD, and Aaron, thank you all for joining us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Can't wait to rank the 400 podcast now.
So we're having a good show tonight, but you know, I never get you a gift. I always find it difficult to express myself, particularly, you know, when we have like the holiday specials and we have like 1,000 people here and somebody pisses me off. But now that I'm relaxed and in a jovial mood, I want to give you something that means a lot to me, and I hope it mean a lot to you. And as we forge ahead with 401 and on, this is from me to you. Okay. Living my life in slow hell. Different girl every night at the hotel. I ain't seen the sun shine in 3 damn days. Been fueling up on cocaine and whiskey. Wish I had a good girl to miss me. Lord, I wonder if I'll ever change my ways. Put your picture away. Sat down and cried today. I can't look at you while I'm lying next to her. I put your picture away. Sat down and cried today. Hey, I can't look at you while I'm lying next to her.
Ooh. Called you last night in the hotel. Everyone knows, but they won't tell. But their half-hearted smiles tell me something just ain't right. I've been waiting on you for a long time. Fueling up on heartaches and cheap wine. I ain't heard from you in 3 damn nights. I put your picture away. I wonder where you've been. I can't look at you while I'm lying next to him. I put your picture away. I wonder where you've been. I can't look at you while I'm lying next to Patterson.
Is this helping?
Yeah.
Come on, it's got to be helping a little.
Yeah, no, it is. I like it. I'm curious to see where it goes. The Patterson thing really explains a lot.
No, wow. I wasn't expecting that either.
Yesterday with an old friend.
Was the same old same. How have you been?
Since you've been gone, my world's been dark and gray.
Remind me of brighter days.
I hope you are coming home to stay. I'm guessing that you were headed to church.
And you were drinking yourself away.
All right,
Coke with Billy Jack.
Listen. Enough with the church and drinking. This is a fine, Scott. I understand the sentiment about it. And Armento, strumming the violin in the corner was getting me in the
mood. Pretty good.
Yeah, I had my bathrobe on, I had my glass of wine. Yeah, I'm feeling okay. Claire's in the back. I don't know what he's doing. But everything's good. We're feeling good. Everyone's feeling great. Episode 400. I'm very happy for you guys. I got a better song to help celebrate it. You remember the wrestling album, Scott Criscolo? Do you remember that?
Of course, Vince. I had like 50 copies of it.
It was a gold record around the world. You remember that? You want to really express your feelings about the Place to Be podcast and how you feel about your co-host. I got the best song ever. It was a hit from that album. Mickey, strike up the band. Who the fuck is Mickey? I don't know. I didn't make that shit up. Is there even a Mickey here, Armento? Who's that guy? G. Dr. G. G. Put it on the Pumbaa hat and hit play. Let's do it.
One, two, three. Ow. All right.
Got a pony.
Like Pony Maroney.
Mashed potato. To the alligator.
Put your hand on your hips, yeah.
Let your backbone slip, daddy.
Kota Ibushi.
Like my little Lucy. Hey.
Na 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 na. Need somebody help me say it one time. Na 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 na
na na na na na na. Oh God, you guys are all up here. You fucking blow.
I don't know why Ibushi's in these lyrics.
Come on, Vince. Way better.
I don't
even
know what I'm doing here. Where am I? Why am I here? This isn't Christmas.
Come on.
Time.
Come on, Vince.
Come on, Vince.
Oh, God. That's a little bit gorgeous. What's the brand?
Who's what? Who's he?
Well, the big lab eliminated all of you guys.
You know, I feel all right. Feel pretty damn good, you fucking prick. Oh, yeah.
Come on, y'all, let's sing one more time.
Playing it's like a habit.
Long tall Sally.
So what's doing Lucy?
Doing the what to see.
Daddy, roll over on your back.
I like it like that.
Do that jerk!
Watch me work, y'all!
I'll do it! Wow! Do it! Hear the dude!
Just watch me do it!
Ah, help me! Ah, help me! Ah, fuck you, Criscolo! I hope you don't even live to the next 400. Go fuck yourself!
Well, Scott, we had some spirited debate tonight. We had old friends. We had some singing, some interesting stuff.
Some vain attempts at it, yes.
Mike and the Mad Dog returned. So,
that's right.
You know, a lot of fun. So it's been a great 5 years. 400 episodes in the books. Every time we do one of these, I'm like, I still cannot believe we've done this many.
I never thought we would. I mean, considering, you now have two children and our lives are so busy, on top of the great times it's funny, on top of the recording is we not just you and I spending time together, but we've had all of our Place to Be, like, pay-per-view kind of, meetups and everything. I mean, it's just been fantastic the last couple of years how we've galvanized as friends and family and, I mean, the quest for 500 is doable. I mean, I remember you and I used to talk late at night over some Del Shandy's going, I don't know, 500? And this was like at 312. And it's there, man. It's there for the taking.
Well, and it's funny, too, because our pace obviously slowed once, we just couldn't keep the 2 a week going. But I mean, we did the bulk of the building of these episodes with that, crazy pace we were on. We were doing 2 a week forever. And that got us here to where we could do this. And I think we're going to work to maybe pick it up a little bit. And you know, we're always going to have our kind of other every other week schedule with the vaults, but we're going to work to mix in other stuff here and there, I think, including, you know, diving further into this WrestleMania match list and some other stuff. You know, we're going to work to bring you more kind of in between episodes where we can. So we want to thank you, everyone who's listened to this point and been with us since either the beginning or found us along the way. Our archives are fully up at pleasetobe.podbean.com. You know, iTunes, obviously our feed has grown, so not all our episodes are archived on that feed. But if you go to pleasetobe.podbean.com, you can download any of our episodes that you want or stream them right from there. They're all archived, every single one. And you can search from the tag that'll filter them out just for these. So, you know, we've had a ton of Vintage Vault, ton of interviews, random lists, live watches, guests, everything. You know, it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, who would have thought from the start when I convinced you to quit that radio gig and jump over to the podcast world.
No, you know, I just love being on the air. I love talking. I love, you know, you and I have a great thing. We always have. And you know, some days I do miss radio. But this is, it's all about convenience now. And I think we've put out a great product. You know, we're not like these other guys and, you know, these other people who put out stuff and, you know, it's just not good quality wise. You can tell that they don't put a lot into it. And, you know, we found the right equipment, the right software. We take this very seriously, and that's why they sound so great. I mean, you can go back to episode 2, and even with that stuff, still, we worked so hard to try and make it sound as best as we can. And that's the key. You gotta make an investment, not just money. And we haven't spent a boatload, but, you know,
a lot of time spent, a lot of effort
put
in. And I mean, just looking at what's been built out of it, just the, you know, the site and all the other podcasts that have been part of the family and the feed. I mean, it's insane the amount of content, you know, that we pump out. You know, it's like I'm working on something now for the site that kind of goes back through all that stuff. And it's like, damn, you know, we've emptied out a lot over the past few years. And like you mentioned, the meetups, too. I mean, I'll be in Dallas this weekend meeting up with a group of guys. And it's like, it's just crazy to think. You know, you'll see people mention sometimes about, oh, I wish I had a wrestling friend. And we used to say it too. Like, you know, for a while it was me and you, or, you know, for a while it was me and my friend Jim, and that was it. And now it's like we have this web, this network of, you know, dozens and, you know, almost hundreds of people that we can talk wrestling with on a daily basis. I mean, you know, I talk more to some of the guys from the site than I do the people in real life, you know, I shouldn't say real life, but every day, just personal life. You know, it's nuts to think how much time and you know, and it's awesome. Like, I look forward to our discussions every day with the group. And looking forward to, you know, maybe doing SummerSlam again this year. And who knows what else will come up along the way. And WrestleMania in Orlando next year, people are already talking about. So it's great. And it, you know, anecdote to wrap it up. I have a very early flight Sunday out of Boston. And my wife was like, you don't know, none of these guys live in Boston that you can crash with, so you don't have to drive up there. And I'm like, God, I'm like, for her to even say that, like, you know, you have all these guys that you're friends with through the site and none of them live in Boston. It's like, it's just funny to think.
I know.
The web and the network we've built out there where, you know, we have people almost in every city we visit. We can say, hey, I'm going to run into so-and-so, or, you know, I'm going to visit with so-and-so while we're here. That's one of the coolest parts. And we did that from the beginning. We said, you know, we had the feedback and we brought our friends and listeners in, made them part of the show. And that was all for a reason. That was so we could build up a family and be more than just another podcast. And we wanted to, you know, build it into more than that. So again, thanks to everyone that's been here since the beginning. Even if you're no longer, you know, a listener, we thank you. If, you know, those guys that were there in the early days, even especially busting balls like a Derek LaRue, who helped us so much with the technology part in the beginning. You know, big shout out to him and others that were listening from day one and helped to spread the word. And, you know, a lot of the guys from the old CWO Blog of Doom that make up much of the staff now were such a big part of this too. So thanks to all them. Thanks to everyone else for listening. Thank you for you, Scott, for all the hard work you've put in over the last 400 episodes. And hopefully everyone will keep listening, keep supporting PlaceTobe.com. Thank you for your support, and always bring your feedback, both positive and negative. We take it very seriously and work to improve. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Actually, less than a couple weeks. Right? We'll be back in
Week from Monday.
Yeah, we'll be back a week from Monday. We're Rumble 06. We'll continue our trek to the vault, and then we'll see what we can do from there. So for episode 400, for all our guests, we thank you, Leanne, and all the guys from PlaceTobe.com. Scott, for you, for me. We're out. Everyone enjoy WrestleMania. If you're listening to this afterwards, hopefully you enjoyed WrestleMania, and we'll talk to you in a week. When the sun shines, we shine together. Told you I'd always be here forever. Said I'd always be a friend to Kendall, and I'll stand out to the end. Now
now that it's raining more than ever, know that we still have each other. You can stand under my umbrella. You can stand under my umbrella. Umbrella!